Welcome back. Another episode of the Sunday Puncher Podcast. I got Tom and Lex here with me. Guys, it's nice to have you on. We spent a good amount of time right now doing our little pre-podcast, which if you don't know what that is, you can go over. We'll talk about it later. But we do a pre-podcast that is not on our main feed. Had a lot of fun. But I told the guys, we got to record now. We got to talk about some boxing. And so last night, Terrence Crawford made his return. One of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the sport. He fought Kell Brook, who, I mean, Kell Brook is not the same guy that he was, you know, that he was a few years ago. But Kell Brook's still a guy with a name. He still is a guy who shows up in shape, is absolutely shredded. He looked really good before the bell rang, but the bell had to ring. And we saw that, you know, Kell got a little bit of a jab. His timing was, you know, he still got some decent timing, but ultimately just really not in the same league as Terrence Crawford. So at least to me, the fight played out very predictably, if you were willing to be honest about where Kell Brook was at in his career. And so, you know, first significant shot of the fight, Terrence Crawford basically ended the fight. Now, I did see something that I thought was really interesting. And that is that Terrence Crawford started slow. And I want to push back on this, but I'll give this to you guys first. Do you think Terrence Crawford had a slow start in this fight or underperformed or anything even close to that? Tom, let's start with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's the age-old debate with Terrence Crawford because he's been hit early in so many of his fights, hurt in so many of his fights, you know, knocked down in his last fight against Mean Machine. And, you know, I mean, that's always, we have the same discussion after every one of his fights, which is, you know, if he gets a knockout, you get a knockout, it makes people forget what happened before that. And, you know, I mean, this is just such an extreme example of that because, I mean, Kell Brook is so damaged. You know, his eyes were, both of his eyes were red. You know, he was saying after the fight, I got hit by a shot I didn't see coming, you know, which begs the question, does that have to do with having two previously broken eye sockets potentially damaging his vision? You know, he looked, I mean, we were talking about this beforehand, literally the single most dehydrated I've ever seen a fighter look. So it was like,
oh,
you know,
God, that's crazy, but go on.
What was his, well, in boxing anyway, I don't know.
Have you seen Brandon Rios weigh-ins? Like, Jesus. You want to talk about dehydrated?
Say this is very much, I mean, and especially when he was so dehydrated and gone, it really, you know, showed the damage he had around his eyes. You know, it was just a horror show. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's the age-old question, though. I mean, having said all of that, you know, Crawford finds the punches. He gets the knockouts. You know, he's riding a nice knockout streak. I mean, even in the Benavidez fight, you know, that fight went, you know, a pretty competitive 12 rounds. And then in that final round, he still found the punch. So, you know, we haven't seen Crawford really pushed. We haven't seen one of those fights go the distance in a long time. So, I mean, from my standpoint, he does get the benefit of the doubt. I mean, you know, he's finding those punches. And so, you know, the narrative they always push on the broadcast, he's putting the data in the computer, you know, and we really haven't seen the other side of that. I mean, we haven't really seen someone get the better of him in the second half of a fight because the fights usually don't go to a second half. So I'd say for the time being, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
So you don't think he had a slow start is what you're saying?
You know, when you get a knockout in round four and then, you know, you hurt a guy with the first significant punch you land and then immediately follow up with punches that he doesn't come close to see coming once he gets buzzed a little bit. I mean, it's hard to criticize that performance. You know, it makes it, it does, you know, if Crawford supporters want to say that was the master plan, it's hard to argue with that.
Okay, good. I'm glad you said that. I'm in agreement with you. And to not expand, but really take this in a slightly different direction, though, I think, first of all, with a fight that doesn't go past six rounds, don't come at me with a slow start, okay? You just show me how, like, I don't understand the take that there was a slow start from Crawford. Anyone who says that is just looking to have a take to be a contrarian or something, because it's just ignorant to me. Terrence Crawford had a slow start. It was three rounds, and you could argue, you know, okay, Brooke landed some jabs, but herein lies the problem that I have with people and their assessments of Terrence Crawford. I feel like a lot of people out there continue to make this mistake of not knowing who Terrence Crawford is as a fighter. Now, I don't know if they're scared of Crawford. Certainly the writers are. You know, you're seeing a lot of bad-mouthing articles about Terrence Crawford this week, and we'll get into all of that, which is completely nonsense and ridiculous, and those writers should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. But I get it. You know, Terrence Crawford doesn't want to do an interview with you, so you got to take it out on him. But Terrence Crawford fights the same way every time, and every single week it appears that, or sorry, not every single week, but every single time he fights, it appears that people just forget who he is. Terrence Crawford is not slick. He's not a defensive fighter. He is there to be hit. You know, Terrence Crawford ain't interested in moving his head all around. No, he's not. That's not what he does. Terrence Crawford's a guy, he's a seek and destroy. He finds his openings, he counterpunches, and finishes fights. That's how Crawford fights. I don't understand why people don't, like, are so confused and perplexed that Terrence Crawford may lose rounds here and there. Is because his job, like, he doesn't see himself as a fighter that's going to go out and there to, he's not banking rounds. He has never in his career needed to bank rounds. Because everyone he's fought, he's basically dominated. And yes, we can get into a conversation of, well, what is the level of his opposition? I don't really care. Because who he is, at least that we've seen thus far as a fighter, he's a guy that gets hit. And if he gets hit with some jabs in the first and second round, so be it. It's not a story. If Terrence Crawford was getting hit by an overhand right and dropped twice in the first two rounds, all right, that sounds a little slow to me. But other than that, that performance last night was your standard vintage Terrence Crawford performance where he beats the hell out of somebody, and he did. The only good thing for Kell Brook is he went down immediately and got up and basically was a sitting duck, and he had his night ended quickly, which was better than a 12-round sustained beatdown, which could have also happened, and he probably would have needed more titanium fused into his face. What about you, Lex?
Do I think it was a slow start? I mean,
I've now set you up that you actually can't say it was, because we're about to get into an argument if you do.
No, I wouldn't say that.
But you can go in a different direction if maybe, you know, obviously.
No, I don't even like they were talking about that on the telecast, if I remember correctly, your broadcast about slow starts. And it's just like, I hate in boxing how people try to like put you in a bucket, like, you know, Ward has to be like Floyd or Bud has to be like Floyd because they're both more technical.
Let's say Shakur Stevenson, because they've actually tried to do that.
It's just dumb. Like, they say Floyd would go off to slow start. So, like, let's just use that with Bud. I don't think it applies. I just think Bud fights how he fights and he wins. So, like, I don't think about whether he had a slow start or not. He went out there and kicked Brooks ass. So whether or not he had a slow start, it doesn't really matter to me. I don't think he had a slow start. I agree with you. I think Bud fights how he fights. Brooke fought how he fought. Brooke looked decent, for like kind of decent. And then the first tough shot that landed on him, he couldn't. I mean, I think his punch resistance is probably gone, to Tom's point, with the weight cut. So, you know, that made it tough. But, I mean, slow start or not, didn't matter. Bud got him out of there. Did what he needed to do.
I mean, how many times do we have to have conversations about somebody catching Crawford early in fights? We've done it literally every single time, including, you know, Tom, you referenced that Mean Machine had dropped him. Not really. It wasn't officially ruled a knockdown, but yes, Mean Machine caught him with some really nice right hands, certainly early in that fight. And I wouldn't even classify that as a slow start. It's like, that's Terrence Crawford. He gets hit. Like, let's stop thinking that because he's the black fighter that he's supposed to have incredible defense. No, Terrence Crawford's an aggressive, come-forward guy. Like, come on, let's classify him where he belongs. And this may be the conundrum with the promotion of Terrence Crawford. And there are many facets of this conversation we could get into. But, like, I feel like Top Rank, for a long time, has kind of struggled with how they want to classify Crawford. You know, they want to talk about how opponents don't land, you know, they land like 21% against him, which is the best in the welterweight division. But at the same time, they also want to say that he's, you know, the pain machine and things like that. And, you know, I think if they were to classify him as just a, like, a killer in the ring and one of the most aggressive come forward fighters, they'd have a lot easier of a job at promoting him and not turning this on him. Like, it is his problem, to get over. And, let me ask this question to you guys. They make a, like, this huge song and dance about Terrence Crawford on their broadcast. And although it's a little conflicted at times, I think one thing is that is very consistent is that they make this claim, and at least now they do, they make this claim that Terrence Crawford is the best pound-for-pound fighter in the sport. And after last night's performance, do you agree with their claim that he is the best? Tom?
Boy, that was a circuitous route to get to that question. I mean, look, there's no argument for Terrence Crawford being number one pound for pound that I think is a credible argument. I mean, it's very strange. ESPN moved him to the number one slot. I mean, it was always a little questionable that they had Lomachenko and Crawford number one and number two. I mean, they clearly weren't prepared. They clearly weren't afraid of the, you know, appearance of favoritism for their home fighters. You know, it's a little ridiculous. I mean, Canelo's clearly number one. They have Errol Spence ahead of Terrence Crawford in the welterweight rankings. But, you know, I guess they're weighing Crawford's, you know, huge victories over fighters like Derry Jean at lower weight classes to inflate Crawford's resume. I mean, it just, I mean, it's silly to me. So no, I mean, if the question is he number one, it's easy to say he isn't. He's definitely a good fighter, but I mean, he's in this odd champions version of, you know, he looks good against the level of opposition he's in with. But, you know, as we've said about the slow start thing, it's always a little bit of a mixed bag. And it raises the question of what if he's in there with a durable fighter who can go 12 rounds with him? What do those fights look like? I mean, you know, we know that he can dominate C-level opponents, and we still haven't seen what he looks like against, you know, B-plus, A-minus, those other types of fighters that he just hasn't been in yet with yet. So no, not number one, and it's sort of ridiculous that at age 33, there are still so many questions left to answer about him.
What about you, Lex? Is he number one?
For me, no. I'm a big fan of, like, what have you done for me lately? And
Janet Jackson.
We should have played it, man, on the pre-pod. But, yeah, but, I mean, he passes the eye test, clearly. Amazing fighter, can do a lot of stuff in the ring, but at the end of the day, man, Canelo is still Canelo. And like, I know what, you know, ESPN and certain members of the media want to do with their pound for pound list. But this is why, like, I almost wish that we would get rid of the pound for pound list concept, because there's really no rhyme or reason to it. Like, Canelo beat Kovalev, who is, like, we all know who Kovalev is, but he's not pound for pound number one. But Bud is number one for beating Brook, who never really, like, his big win is Sean Porter. Like, that doesn't really add up to me. But I mean, I don't know, the whole pound for pound list is kind of like some people still have Triple G, some people have Usyk, some people have Better Beef. I just don't really understand, like, what pound for pound even means. But as far for me is, what have you done for me lately? Canelo has Triple G, Lara, Trout, Kovalev, Danny Jacobs. Like, he keeps racking up these good wins.
Trout was 2012, buddy.
I mean, what? So people still talk about what Bud did in at 35 and stuff like that against Gamboa. So,
what have you done for me lately in 2012? But I mean, you at least you did. All that was the only one from, like, not from 3 years or later. But
right, but he's defeated. So
Rollins says, "Oh, what have you done for me lately? List a fight from the Obama administration." The first one.
My bad. He caught me.
I mean, no, but that's a good point, because Canelo's not getting credit for beating Lara, for beating Trout anymore. He's now on to Kovalev. And, like, Canelo's actually demonstrated what pound for pound is, which is, like, okay, weight neutralized. Neutralize weight. Who wins between these two fighters? So if you got Tyson Fury and you shrunk him down to 160, and you took Canelo and you had to shrink him down just a little bit to 160, who wins? And like, this is why it's ridiculous to put heavyweights on the list, because like, heavyweights, just by the way of they fight, they're big, they're slow. It's hard to imagine a heavyweight translating at like 147. But Canelo has actually demonstrated, like, oh, well, you've seen me at 154, seen me at 160, you've seen me at 168, you've seen me at 175. And across all those divisions, I have marquee wins. I don't know what he has to do to these people in order for them to give Canelo the respect. I mean, you look at PBC, they give him the respect, obviously, over, well, we'll see going forward. And this is a whole other conversation if they give him the respect. But I guess ESPN decided that they would not give him any respect if, you know, since he's probably not going over there. But here's something else to mention is, and this is like super minor, and we probably shouldn't spend a lot of time talking about this, but there was a lot of criticism over at PBC, if you remember, on the Pacquiao Thurman broadcast, where people got really upset that when they showed the welterweight champions, they did not include Terrence Crawford. And it was a blatant omission. And I feel like you could make the same argument. The only problem is, like, it's more subjective to talk about pound for poundness. But you could make the same argument that Top Rank and ESPN's, one, fascination, but two, actual rankings of their pound for poundness reek of bias and disrespect for certain fighters who probably should get recognition. And, I mean, look, let's be clear. Nobody's going to, and nobody, you know, that's just not something some people are going to do, but it's just as egregious to me. And I mean, the funny thing is, like, I really don't care. I don't make a pound for pound list. I know who's not pound for pound, but I don't make a pound for pound list because obviously it's subjective and nobody cares. But, you know, as far as Crawford's case, I mean, you could put him at number one. I wouldn't fault you for that. But as Lex, you pointed out, like, in order to do that, you've got to give Crawford credit for wins that were so long ago. You know, I don't think, and especially you want to consider that Terrence Crawford is 33 years old. He's clearly not the same guy he was at 28 or 25 or whatever. And you can't tell me that, he may be a smarter fighter now, but he's certainly not as athletic as he was back then. I just think it's a ridiculous thing to, if you have him at number one, it means you got to either A, overvalue, you got to overvalue eye test. Which, I mean, you could do, again, is your list, but it's kind of ridiculous. Or you're giving him credit for wins that were a really long time ago, and I don't like that. I want to know what, like, where is the empirical evidence that you are better than everybody else in the sport, weight neutralized? And right now, it ain't Crawford.
Well, the thing that's so frustrating for me with this Crawford thing is, like we all know that Top Rank really doesn't have anyone at welterweight, but, like, the timing of these fights, as a boxing fan, they're really frustrating. And the outcomes also are frustrating. So, like, I'm sure everybody who is listening to this wants to see Crawford in a good fight. We also all know that all the guys are with PBC. With that said, this fight ended the first hard punch that Bud landed. His last fight ended because, like, Amir Khan guy punched in the balls.
Well, that was,
that was Mean Machine. Sorry. Mean Machine was a good fight. Then we go back to Khan. Then we go back to Benavidez. The fight ended with him, like, limping around the ring. It's just so, like, as a fan that just wants to see good, competitive fights, it's frustrating to see fights continue to end, like, I don't want to say in weird ways, but, like, I wasn't really satisfied with the ending.
I think...
Like, Teofimo versus Lomachenko, when it ended, I was like, wow, that was, like, a really fun fight. It was a satisfying ending. If they did a rematch, I'd probably watch it. Like, that was a good night of boxing. Tank versus Leo, the same thing. Like I was running around my room super pumped with the outcome. This fight, I was just sitting there like, eh, like whatever, cool. Bud kicked his ass again. But, like, I'm ready for him to be in, like, a good fight. Like, a good, good one. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's tough because they try so hard, and they really did. They tried really hard to promote this into something that it really wasn't. I mean, you saw Mike Coppinger tweet it out, which was probably one of the most pathetic tweets I've ever seen from somebody who is a journalist, talking about, you know, if Kell Brooks shows up as the guy who beat Sean Porter, and, you know, this could be a really, really good fight, blah, 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 you know, something along those lines. And it's crazy because we're really counting on a fighter to show up the same person they were 6 years ago, despite having been stopped twice by two big punchers, suffering two broken orbital bones that necessitated titanium being fused into their face, not to mention being attacked with a machete for whatever reason that was. You really are trying to make the case that if the most infinitesimal chance that that is the guy who shows up, which, you know, it's clearly not, this is going to be a good fight. Like, it's just like, you my know, God, come on.
I'm gonna interrupt you because I actually thought that was a subtle, like, shade tweet.
Really?
Because he acknowledged in that tweet that he had been knocked out twice, right? I mean, he's like, well, if he shows up, you know, despite having had his orbital bone broken twice. I don't have the tweet in front of me, but my memory of
if
that
it's
was
a shade tweet, I'll give him credit. That's good.
He kind of, you know, he did include that, you know, so that was my reading.
I could be wrong.
You know, it's Coppinger, and, you know, the Athletic guys were carrying Top Rank's water all weekend. So, you know, I mean, they had narratives going in every different direction. But, yeah, I mean, we're not even talking about the most fun stuff about this fight. I mean, come on.
Rattle it off.
You know,
Tom.
We're not talking. What?
I said rattle it off. What are we missing? Sure.
Well, sure. So you have all the business implications. The
well,
crazy,
we're
going to
get there.
You know,
I have that written down right here.
Narratives. Well, I mean, I guess that's most of it. I mean, just some fun news and notes. I mean, like, I love the last time Mean Machine fought. They said his next fight was they're aiming for a Crawford rematch. I don't think they mentioned that on this broadcast at all. I mean, the whole thing about Bob Arum talking about they were negotiating with an unspecified Arab country.
that sounds like
you know, multiple times said like the health officers from that country, like, wow, you know, that really makes it sound reputable and not totally made up that he wouldn't even mention the name of the country on the broadcast.
It's like in like the West Wing when they have to like invent Arab countries to go to war with because they don't want to piss off the actual countries.
right, exactly. I mean, just so much comedy in this. I mean, we haven't gotten into the whole Maloney thing yet. I mean, that was crazy.
Oh my God, Tom. We have a list. We're going in order here, okay?
Sure. Well, who the fuck cares about Crawford's pound-for-pound implications? Come on.
No, that's what they want us to talk about. That's what they want us to talk about. They don't want to talk about...
I don't have my finger on the pulse of our listeners, but I don't give a shit about that. Anyway, let's keep going.
So, like, here's what they don't want us to talk about. Which is the complete inconsistent messaging about Terrence Crawford from Bob Arum and Todd DeBuff. And specifically, I'm really interested to get your take. Bob Arum, like, was just on the warpath with Crawford. And he's really out to babyface himself by basically saying, like, Terrence Crawford talks too much. Or, sorry, not talks too much.
Talks too little.
Costs too much. Doesn't talk enough. Can't promote himself. Like Teofimo and Shakur, which, you know, obviously we know superstar in boxing, Shakur Stevenson, proven draw. And he can't do that. He can't be like Mayweather and Pacquiao and all these guys. And he's losing money when Terrence Crawford fights. And they're almost making it like they're the ones who are the victims here. And if Terrence Crawford doesn't re-sign with Top Rank, it'll be in their favor. It would be a blessing for them and not a big blow that they're losing somebody who has consistently proven that he can draw a pretty good rating when he fights on TV. Not to mention he can draw a crowd too, depending where you put him. So what do you think Top Rank's strategy here is with all, specifically with Arum's comments about Crawford? What do you think the strategy here is? And do you believe what they're saying?
I have a lot to say about this, but Lex, why don't you go? I've been talking.
Yeah, my opinion on this is quick. Like, whenever there's all this noise from Bob or like the people who write for Bob, I try not to pay it too much attention because it's just like it feels a lot like misinformation to me. I don't know what's going on with this whole situation, and like ultimately, like I know it's going to come down to whether or not Bud will leave Top Rank. You know, like knowing what we know about him and his past with Top Rank, I'm not confident that he's gonna leave. So, like, they can say what they want about
here
it.
Here we go.
I
say, here we go. We're about to argue.
Yeah. So let me get my quick thing off so Tom can go in. But you know, all we know about his past, I'm just not fully confident he's going to leave. So they could say what they want. When we fast forward 6 to 12 months from now, and like we're at the point that he might leave, like I'm not like overly optimistic that he will, and we'll be in a position to see a Bud versus Keith, or Bud versus Errol, or Bud versus Danny, which is like what I'd love to see, Bud versus Sean. So I don't know. I'm trying not to get too wrapped up in this, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, just to sort of recap for people who weren't following this stuff closely, I mean, this has been a very weird promotion because, like, so for the last, like, few weeks, Top Rank, you know, it's like this goes hand in hand with, like, who's the Top Rank friendly press, because, you know, Aram is so heavy-handed and Top Rank are so heavy-handed and trying to get their messaging across through their Top Rank friendly media. You know, these are the guys who sit in, you know, as they literally call them, like, the VIP seats at shows. And then, you know, you'll have Aram and the other Top Rank sort of officers come and talk to these guys and really try to lay in with their messages. And, you know, it seemed like, you know, the pretty clear messaging leading up to this was there's a good chance that Crawford could be going to the PBC next year. And then given this context, you know, Top Rank has done nothing wrong with Crawford's career. He's been overpaid and they've lost money on him. And if he has to go, basically, they're the good guys. And, you know, they've done everything they possibly can on behalf of Crawford. And, you know, some of that stuff is true. You know, some of that stuff is true. I mean, you know, you have Crawford's contract. You know, we've been discussing this a lot in the Discord in the last few days. But it's like he's made about $15 million, $15 to $20 million since he's been fighting at welterweight. So, you know, 2018, 2019, 2020, over the course of five fights, you know, that's a good amount of money. You know, if he, you know, he's someone who grew up in poverty and now he's making, you know, eight figures, that's good money. Could he have made more money at the PBC? Yeah, he could have. You know, Errol Spence is making close to $10 million per fight. And he's had, you know, a stream of opponents. So, also, if you look at the amount of money Matchroom was throwing out, you know, Crawford could have made more money to sign with DAZN. I mean, he kind of it's weird to say this, but from like 2018 and 2019, arguably he was underpaid. He signed his contract extension at kind of the worst possible time for him. You know, his management hasn't always shown great acumen. But as he sort of arrives at the end of 2020 in sort of the COVID economy, with DAZN's money drying up, his contract is looking pretty good. So as his contract is running out, you say, okay, the past is the past. Now he's looking forward. I think, you know, if he could continue to make $3.5 million guaranteed to fight bums at Top Rank, he might not want to, you know, he might continue to do that. That's a pretty good contract. But I mean, is that sustainable? I mean, their pool of opponents is even less than it was previously. You know, Top Rank knows this. It's hard to put on these events. This event this past weekend didn't generate much buzz. Mean Machine fight didn't generate much buzz. The Crawford fight was a total, you know, total loss with $10 million in guarantees and only 125,000 pay-per-view buys. So, you know, you end up in a situation where Top Rank probably is going to play hardball if Crawford wants to try to re-sign. And, you know, for the PBC, they have such a deep division. They don't necessarily need him that much. So it's kind of a weird situation for all parties. I don't think the PBC is going to act like they need Crawford more than he needs them. And I think Top Rank is not going to be interested in re-signing him at his existing rate with, you know, a limited amount of appealing matchups they can do with him. So that's really what will be interesting to see. I know I just laid out a mouthful, but I mean, have I done a pretty, I mean, there's more to stuff to talk about each of these things, but have I done a pretty good job of laying that out? Do you guys have things to add about, you know, sort of what's on the table here?
Well, I have my interpretation of it.
Go ahead.
All right. If this makes you mad, I apologize, but I'm not sorry. Here's what I think at the essence of this whole situation, and you laid it out. This is what I believe is at the essence of this. If I like, you know, try to do a little junior psychologist here, this is what I've come to. I think Bob Arum has gone on the defensive and his goons, Evan Korn, Bruce Champler, Carl Moretti are working the phones, doing what Bob says, which is like, yo, feed these stories about what's going on with the situation. Because here's the reality. Terence Crawford's not happy with the situation. And if you were his fighter, if you were in his shoes, you wouldn't be happy either. You are, as they gas you up on your broadcast and on all the ESPN broadcasts, they gas you up. You're the number one pound-for-pound fighter, blah, blah, blah. Just blow you every single time they mention your name. But every time it comes to, well, what about Terence Crawford getting a big fight? What if Terence Crawford could fight somebody who's on his level? Blah, blah, blah. You know, cement that legacy, get the big-time money, all that stuff. Top Rank don't know what to do. They start putting it on Terence. They say, you don't want to do promotion. You don't want to be like Floyd. You don't want to be like Shakur. You don't want to be like Teofimo. You don't want to be like Pacquiao, which is ridiculous, by the way. And it's somehow his problem, which is not true. It's not his problem. And Crawford's not happy with that. So much so that he got his lawyer involved, as it was reported. He got his lawyer involved, which means that he wants out, probably. Which means that he's serious. Maybe he's just threatening them, firing a warning shot. I don't know. But here's what I think is going on. This has pissed off Bob Arum. He's never been this blatant with his comments about Terence Crawford. And frankly, I haven't seen him be like this, you know, going to this extent with the fighter in a really long time. Because I think Bob Arum thinks that they've done a lot for Terence Crawford and that he should be grateful. He should know his place. He has, and I'm telling you guys, I don't know if you guys know this, but Terence Crawford has a great deal with Top Rank and he deserves it. The dude consistently pulls in ratings, okay? Up until the Teofimo and Lomachenko fight, which was great, and that did a great rating. The best rating up to that point, though, was Crawford and Benavidez. When they launched ESPN Plus, who was the fighter that they wanted to launch with the fight, you know, the first fight on ESPN Plus? It was Terence Crawford and Jeff Horn. Okay? That kind of tells you internally how they feel about Terence Crawford. But somehow this isn't enough. And it's so funny because Terence Crawford gets the blame when it's not his problem. He's been put in a position to fail. You know, your first impression makes a difference. Well, what was his first impression in a quote-unquote big fight? It was him fighting on pay-per-view against Victor Postol. I don't know what you had to have been smoking to think that that was going to be a success. It was reported to have done 60,000 buys. Whether you believe that or not, you know, that's on you. Okay, but even so, if you take it at its reporting of 60,000 buys, it is among like 3 pay-per-views ever associated with a big network, Showtime, HBO, etc. One of 3, I believe, like 3, only 3 have ever gone below 100,000. And that's one of them. That is a historic failure. Now, whose problem was that? Was that Terence Crawford's or was that Top Rank? That was Top Rank. They got forced into putting that fight on pay-per-view because they weren't interested in covering the cost. So they went to HBO. HBO said, well, this is not a fight we're interested in. Okay, we come to an agreement. Let's put it on pay-per-view and we'll let the cards fall where they may. Now, who got blamed for that being a failure? The fight should have never been on pay-per-view, but Terence Crawford didn't make that decision. That was Top Rank. Okay? Now, he gets another chance at pay-per-view. Fights Amir Khan. They finally decide, we're going to pay for an opponent. Why don't we pay for an opponent that's been popular for a long time, blah, blah, blah. But they went conservative with the matchmaking. $5 million for Amir Khan. What did you think was going to happen? They reported that 120,000 people bought that pay-per-view. It's probably lower than that. Probably lower. But hey, who got blamed yet again? Terence Crawford. What has Terence Crawford done? Consistently just comes out, demolishes these guys. Now, of course, you could say, well, these are lower level opponents. Of course he's doing that. Sure. But he's doing it in entertaining fashion. He's doing everything you want from your fighter. He's intense. He gets stoppages and knockouts. How, like, that is now on them. You are failing. Now, could Terence Crawford be a little more friendly, all that stuff? Sure. But he's the fighter. It's their job to create a narrative around him. And he's going to be who he is. And, you know, that's just not who he is. He's not going to go out there and be like Floyd. His trash talking is a level of trash talking that's going to make people uncomfortable. And if he went and did that, people would complain about that. So I just, I don't get, you know, I don't get why they think that they're these victims here, but that's what they do. At the end of the day, Top Rank thinks that they're the victim of Terrence Crawford's contract that they gave him. They're the ones that signed Terrence Crawford in 2018 before the fight with Benavidez, which was his best fight in terms of ratings. They signed him to this deal. $4 to $5 million guarantee for fights, okay? And he came out and in his very next fight delivered a 12-round fight, averaged something like 2 million viewers for the entire duration of the 12 rounds that he fought Benavidez. And somehow, this is Terrence Crawford's fault. It's not. And if he leaves them, which he absolutely should, I think anyone, you know, well, I can get into why I can argue both sides of this, but he absolutely should leave. Because it seems like what the problem here is that they don't believe in him. Well, if someone don't believe in you, I think this is time when you go out and you gamble on yourself. And leaving and going independent would be the ultimate show of Terrence Crawford saying, maybe I wasn't the problem. Maybe it was you. So I know I said a lot there, guys. So I'll leave the floor to you. Anything you want to respond to there, take this in a different direction. Anything, guys?
Yeah, Lex, go ahead.
No, I mean, to be honest, I thought you nailed it on the head. I was, like, listening intently. I'm curious, Tom, if you have anything to add.
I mean, there's a bunch of stuff we still haven't covered with this. But, I mean, I think regarding Top Rank, it's less like, it's the right way of saying it, just trying to blame Crawford. I mean, it's such a weird thing because they operate in a reality where they really try to present that they are the top promoter in the world. You know, there's like a Donald Trump level to this where it's like they always have to be winning. They can't, you know, there can be no slippage. There can be, you know, it's just kind of weird and bizarre, like the sort of the pettiness of some of this stuff on like a level of boxing Twitter discourse where like their executives will come and like enter into Twitter discussions to try to prove their standing. So yeah, there's a lot of weirdness with that, with this, where they're really trying to say like, it's not our fault. You know, we did everything we could for Crawford, where it's sort of like, you know, it's that meme of like nobody, absolutely nobody, Top Rank, you know, like we promoted Crawford as well as we could. He can't promote himself. It's like who was at, you know, who is that even a response to?
Do you think it's fair, or I'm curious on your thoughts on this. Like, do you think that the change and the shift in the way that they're talking about him, this whole narrative, is maybe them telegraphing the move and baby facing it because they know that Crawford is either A, not going to get renewed. They don't want to renew his contract at the terms that it's at and that they anticipate he will be asking for. Or Crawford's already said, like, yeah, I'm done with you guys.
I think it's, I think it's not that simple. I think, you know, there could be something happening behind the scenes we don't know, but I think it's a combination of they're trying to keep up appearances for prospects they're still trying to sign, like Keyshawn Davis. There's also the possibility of Crawford leaving and going to the PBC, and they're sort of trying to protect their own reputation related to that. There's also the chance that they're trying to renegotiate with him for a contract extension. I mean, you know, I think...
Yeah, this isn't an answer. Exactly what you want to say when you want to go back to the table with somebody.
Well, I mean, again, if they're paying him $3.5 million, look.
No, it's way more than that.
There's been a diminishing returns to his fights, you know.
Which you said earlier in the summer.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's like you look at the pool of opponents, like they had to pay $5 million to bring in Khan. And that pay-per-view definitely didn't make money. You know, they paid $2 million to bring in Brook. I mean, he hadn't fought at 147 in 3 years. He has two broken eye sockets. It was a joke. The fight didn't generate any buzz. You know, so it's like, what are they going to do? I mean, if they want to bring over PBC guys, even someone like Ugas, you think Al Heyman's probably going to hold out for $2 million for Ugas to bring him over, you know? And certainly Sean Porter, Danny Garcia, Keith Thurman, those guys are going to start at, you know, $5 million up to $10 million to do those fights. I mean, those fights aren't going to make money. Crawford just isn't a big enough draw. So, I mean, just the Terrence Crawford economy at Top Rank doesn't really work for them. He doesn't generate enough money to justify the cost of opponents they'll have to bring in. And he doesn't generate enough money to justify his current minimum. So then you start to get into why would they even want to re-sign him? And I think that that's sort of an interesting other question that we were also discussing in the chat, which is like, do they need someone who, you know, you can debate how big of a draw he is. I mean, he doesn't do like Keith Thurman, Danny Garcia ratings, but, you know, he does good ratings relative to top ranks other people. You know, I feel like that's a little bit of a canard because it's like, you know, Errol Spence can do big ratings, but he's moved up to the pay-per-view level. Like Tank could do big ratings. He's moved up to the pay-per-view level. You know, it's not really a fair comparison. The only reason he's not on pay-per-view is because he can't draw on pay-per-view. So it's like, I mean, but do they, you know, still relative to their pool of fighters. I mean, you have Fury, but he's split between them and MTK. Lomachenko just lost. It's not a given that Teofimo in his next fight is going to be able to replicate that type of those types of ratings from the Lomachenko fight if they don't have a decent opponent. So it's like, you know, I'm sort of getting off into a tangent, but that's sort of the next interesting thing to me is like, what does Top Rank look like with Terrence Crawford or without Terrence Crawford? Because I think that really factors into how motivated they are to make some type of deal. I mean, they have a lot of fun prospects, but not a lot of fighters who are proven draws. Anyway, if you guys want to respond to that or anything else that I've said.
Yeah, I guess one thing I wanted to throw in was like, as this whole situation plays out, for me, it'll be really interesting to see how Top Rank handles this, because if they blow this whole thing, I'm pretty sure Bud has like a really good relationship with a lot of the younger fighters who are coming up, like the Shakurs of the world and you know, the young guys like that. And if they blow it with Bud, it could be a big hit for their reputation. Like, I don't think this is the era to play the shut up and dribble game. You know, if you tarnish your relationship with the fighter that a lot of people like, you can say what you want about Bud, but he's not a bad person. He's probably a great person. And if they hurt that rep between Bud and Top Rank and he goes to PBC and it works out on PBC side, I don't think that'll be a good look for Top Rank at all.
No.
Yeah, I definitely have a follow-up to that. Angelo, do you want to say more? Or can I jump in?
Well, I was going to say that. There,
yeah, go ahead.
You see at Crawford's fights, Shakur Stevenson always up in the mix. You know, I don't know exactly what the relationship is. I don't know the history there, but seems like they're close. And Shakur is supposed to be one of their stars. I mean, you don't want to do a guy like Crawford, who he probably looks up to. You don't want to do him dirty like that because it reflects poorly. And I mean, that's not to say that it's a guarantee, because boxing has shown that, you know, years and years of evidence and people don't ever wise up. You know, there are people still signing with Don King for whatever reason. And, you know, I think ultimately, though, Top Rank is just in this position where they want to continue to use this antiquated way of doing business where they cut everywhere that they can so that their profit margin is widest and they aren't willing to spend on opponents. And I bet, you know, if I'm Top Rank, I'd look at it this way, too, probably. So, like, even though I criticize them for this, let's be 100% clear. If this was my business, I would probably, you know, I would look at this way and be like, yeah, I probably would try to do this as much as possible, which is like, yeah, keep my margins thin. Does it make that much of a difference for Crawford to fight, you know, Brooke? Was that much different than fighting Ugas? Like, if they're the same price or no, I'm sorry, not if they're, you know, if Ugas is going to be more, can't he draw the same ratings against Kell Brook as he can Ugas? I'm looking more for where am I getting the value, and probably they're playing this game with Terrence Crawford's opponents, and they know that they're good enough that they know how to play everybody to make it seem like, oh, we are the victims here. We can't get the PBC guys in. Now, let's not, well, I mean, I'm not going to say anything else on this, but it just seems like, you know, there is a real, like, I'm not sure. I guess this is a way to summarize it. I'm not sure if there's struggle to get opponents for Terrence Crawford. I question why that struggle is there and if it is their own creation, which I'm fairly confident that it is their own creation.
Wait, so you're asking if their struggle to get PBC opponents is their own fault?
I'm not saying it's their own fault. It's their creation. Fault is different. Fault implies that maybe you weren't like specifically directly responsible for it. I think what I'm trying to say is they are directly responsible for it. It is a creation on their behalf.
Got it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that one element of it is slightly complicated because it's like, you know, you're talking about different sides of the streets. How much do you have to pay someone a premium to cross the street? And I'll just get back to my point where I don't think Crawford is a big enough draw that you can justify spending that amount of money. You know, if you have to pay Keith Thurman $8 million to fight Terrence Crawford, how much is that event going to generate? I mean, you know, how much do you pay? Do you have to then underpay Crawford in order to justify that with the expectation that he'll win and then can, you know, that'll boost his career? I mean, that's always difficult math. But I just really wanted to focus on the thing Lex was talking about, you know, the younger fighters, because, you know, I already touched on a little bit, but just to really focus on that, like something we've heard from Crawford's camp is that they have been told things which, you know, we just laugh at about PBC fighters. You know, they'll say that Errol Spence is making $2 million per fight, or that Keith Thurman, what did they say he made fighting Manny Pacquiao? It was like $2 or $3 million.
$2 million.
You know, and he made $10 million. You know, I mean, it's like they just keep lying about that stuff. You know, we've heard Terrence Crawford and people from his camp say that all the time, that, you know, Errol Spence isn't selling 300,000 pay-per-view buys. It's like, well, you know, there are lots of sources saying that, you know, the Mikey Garcia fight did close to 400, and the Sean Porter fight did you know, a touch over 300. You know, it's like they just keep lying to him and saying, trust us. And they keep telling him in, you know, increasingly ridiculous ways that he's going to fight Manny Pacquiao eventually, and that's going to solve all his problems. You know, at a certain point, and this applies to the younger fighters too, if you have a fighter at Top Rank who's, you know, let's just say Shakur Stevenson, Teofimo, like Teofimo made $1.5 million for his last fight. You know, how many PBC fighters make more than that every time they fight? A lot, you know. Tank certainly, who's, you know, the sort of peer group, you know, similar age, similar, you know, level in his career, he's making significantly more than that. So, you know, Teofimo has said he's expecting a significant amount of money in his next fight. I mean, I think he said he's wanting close to $10 million from Top Rank. You know, I'm not sure how that math adds up. But the point is, though, at a certain point, if they keep lying to fighters and, you know, their justification is, oh, well, Lomachenko is with us, why would he be with us if we weren't honest to him? Crawford's with us, why wouldn't he be with us if, you know, he wasn't getting paid more than he could get paid anywhere else? I mean, at a certain point, you know, it's like Oscar De La Hoya left them. Floyd left them. You know, tons of fighters have left Top Rank once they've Pacquiao. Sort of topped out of their system. Yeah, Pacquiao Andy most Ruiz. Recently.
Mikey yeah, exactly. Garcia.
Yeah, exactly. The list goes on. So, you know, I mean, Crawford is just the latest example of that. And again, mentioning Shakur specifically, I mean, that's really the example. And as it relates to Keyshawn Davis, it's like, you know, if he's supposed to be the example of, like, you know, I want to be with his promoter because, you know, I like him and I look up to him, you know, that's a really bad look if he sloughs off. Now, again, it's like, how much does Top Rank want to overpay to keep him, to like keep that image up? How much is the PBC, you know, it's like, I'll just say, I mean, this is sort of my last comment on this and then I'll move on. It's like, we, you know, we'll talk about this later on probably, but Canelo versus Caleb Plant fell through, and, you know, the sort of what we know about that, and, you know, it was rumors to start with, but it was sort of like Canelo wants a fight before the end of the year. He's like, okay, give me Caleb Plant, give me an offer. And the answer back from the PBC side was, you know, we don't need to sell this fight short. This could be a bigger fight later. You know, I've talked about this before. It's like the incentives for the PBC are the total lifetime earnings of Caleb Plant, not a single fight. That wasn't the best thing. You know, who has, you know, the balls to turn down a Canelo fight? You know, the PBC does. You know, they're not going to see Crawford and start, you know, they have all of the leverage in a negotiation with Crawford. They have all the opponents, they have all the power, and it's unclear what kind of counteroffer he's even going to get from Top Rank. And, you know, Dazen's money has completely dried up. So
we'll see.
Yeah. So anyway, Hold on, I've said a lot.
I got a conspiracy theory here. You guys are going to love it.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Consider this. Tom, you probably know this, but like last year, maybe I accurately 100% nailed Crawford's contract situation. Said 2021, the earliest Spence fight could happen. I said what's very likely going to happen is they like Spence found out when he had that conversation with Crawford when his contract ended. He wised him up to the game, how to make money, blah blah blah. They agreed that they would fight, and then Crawford changed his tune about money and all that stuff. You remember this, right?
Yes.
So I did on a podcast, patreon.com/SundayPuncher. I do podcasts. I get into stuff like this. I got sources all over boxing. You know, sometimes I will share some information. I may not tell you directly, but I will give you a heads up on what's coming right now or what's about to be coming through the pipeline. So anyway, here's my theory. So I was right. Now, I recently changed my tune because, you know, I got sources and they conflict, but I think I'm right. I was originally right. 2021, Terrence Crawford, his contract, his deal with Top Rank is up, and he said as much. You know, him and Bomac have both said in interviews this week, our contract lasts anywhere from 30 to 90 days. So we've heard also that it's 1 year from now, blah, 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 okay? 2021, though, it'll be up. Now, here's my conspiracy theory, and it is that Top Rank has never, they tried a little bit with the Khan fight, but they have never gone all in with Terrence Crawford. They have never said, we're strapping the rocket to him. They've never given Crawford the Roman Reigns treatment. They haven't given him the Errol Spence treatment, which is to say, we're gonna build it and they will come. They haven't done it. They did Khan, they got cold feet, they didn't like it, and they said never again. And Bob Arum has actually come out and just blatantly said, we'll never do another pay-per-view. And what if this whole time, why they said they would never do a pay-per-view with him again is because they knew in 2021 the contract was up, and they knew also that Crawford's team was not willing to renegotiate the contract in order to, cover their risks, you know, to reduce some of the risk that Top Rank and ESPN, or I guess it's just Top Rank, were taking on Terrence Crawford. Because they always, and I believe this is the case, they've always feared that he would go to PBC. And naturally, they have all the welterweights over there, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of like a no-brainer that would be the biggest threat for him. And so that's my theory, that they're not willing to totally go on board with Terrence Crawford. And it's because they don't have a guarantee on him, you know, for the next, you know, 5-10 years, whatever. I don't know what their contracts are like, but let's just say that they don't have him tied up long term, that he can't go nowhere. What if that's the case? What if that's why they're not willing to shell out for Porter or something like that? Because they don't have that guarantee that he's going to be with them long term.
What in your vision is going all in on Terrence Crawford?
What in my vision is? It's that Terrence Crawford is going, like, we're going to pay the fucking $5 million it takes to fight Sean Porter or whatever it is.
So, okay, I have a question.
Now, hold on. Let me just say this. If you don't think that Terrence Crawford fighting Sean Porter with a proper ESPN promotion can't do a good amount of pay-per-view buys, I mean, my God, you are inept as a promoter. Give me $10 million. I'll get these two guys to fight on pay-per-view. I guarantee we do 300,000 buys. Seriously. And you guys will help too. We will promote this. It's a no-brainer. It's a welterweight fight featuring one of the top pound-for-pound fighters in the sport who's knocked out like his last 13 straight opponents against Sean Porter, who literally has been in multiple fight of the years, I think. I don't know. You decide for yourself. But certainly went through hell. Damn near pulled off the upset against Errol Spence. You're telling me that you can't find a way to sell that fight? You can't take the risk? You can't justify it? I mean, my God. Or Keith Thurman. Or even Ugas. Like, my God, you can't put this together?
Let me ask you a
question. Where are your balls?
Let me ask you a question. Has the pandemic affected the situation for Top Rank and Terrence Crawford at all? Or does it not matter?
Okay. So it depends on who you ask. I think, Tom, we're going to agree on this. I think we'll generally say the same thing. Does not, it's not the biggest effect because his gates aren't that big. Tom, is that where you were going to go?
Yeah, more. I mean, I have general thoughts on this, but yeah, that's fine for now.
Yeah, so I mean, like, just I'll answer briefly, and then Tom, you can jump in. But I think generally not that much. I think there's probably more to it, but I think in general not that much. Terrence Crawford's gates aren't that large, and the reason for that is because when he fights in Omaha, I mean, the tickets aren't that expensive. I mean, like, yeah, they're not as cheap as they were in 2013, but they're generally not that expensive. I mean, Omaha, Nebraska is not as expensive as LA or New York. Now, I've never been there and I never will go there, but that's what my understanding is of, like, the middle of the country is just cheaper than, you know, coastal elite sections like LA and New York. So I don't think it's affected them that much. I think Top Rank is probably hurt in general in other areas, but I don't know. I don't think it's the biggest deal. I mean, what is a realistic cap, the ceiling of what a Terrence Crawford gate does? Like $1 million? Million and a half, maybe? Is that enough to cover, like, expenses where it's like, oh wow, you know, we because of this gate, we didn't lose any money? Like, I don't think that's the case. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even have... I mean, this is just, like, we've gone in so many different directions. I think just the main thing I'd say is, from my perspective, like, financially, they did make an effort to try to bring Crawford to the next level with the Amir Khan fight. I think the weird thing is, though, and, like, that is really just, in hindsight, and even at the time, such a ridiculous decision, as with the Brook fight. You know, I mean, if they were going to spend $5 million on an opponent to make him into a star... That's just so confounding. You know, I don't know, maybe that was partly based on, you know, the math at the time. But yeah, I mean, just look at this. I mean, when they said they offered Danny Garcia $3 million and then paid Khan $5 million. I mean, if they had been able to get Danny Garcia, that might have been the fight which could have brought Crawford to the next level.
That's a bad faith offer. Like, that's my thinking. Like, you look at a bad faith offer like that, that leads me to believe that you aren't serious about going in on this guy.
Well, but that's the weird thing, though. They paid Khan $5 million, and that was the at least reported commission guarantee. So yeah, it's, but that's my point. It's like they did kind of put the money up, but it's like, I mean, look, I've said this before and I'll say it again. It's like there's other politics involved with, you know, having guys cross the street, because, like, you know, what would the price tag be on a Sean Porter fight? What would be the conditions in terms of, like, a rematch clause situations? You know, how difficult would that be? I don't know. I don't purely say Top Rank didn't pull the trigger on this. Again, they spent $5 million on an opponent for a card which was meant to make Crawford a star. I mean, again, did it make sense to do that with Amir Khan? I think everyone would say no. So, look, I still think Crawford has room to grow. I mean, I'm saying two things. One, his current economy doesn't justify bringing some of these people over. But if he were to be on the PBC side, suddenly a lot of this stuff would make sense. I mean, I've said this before. I still want, you know, you said it's a good fight, and I agree. I mean, Sean Porter versus Terrence Crawford, I would buy that on pay-per-view. You know, it just, it's, there's no question, though, the economics make more sense if it's at the PBC, because then you don't have to have Top Rank's cut, for one. You know, that's just money out of the fighters' pockets. And you don't have any of the, you know, other side of the street problems, you know, whatever rematch issues there are, anything complicated in the contracts, all that stuff gets dealt with. You know, and to get back up to a point you were talking about, I mean, it's entirely possible ESPN is basically out of the boxing pay-per-view business, you know.
It could be.
With the, you know, we've heard that from them, and it might be more than just, you know, blowing smoke. I mean, you know, I was joking before. I mean, this is Bob Arum who said, you know, I was lying yesterday, but I'm telling truth today, you know, when he's shitting on the PBC's pay-per-views this fall, it seems convenient because they don't have any pay-per-views this fall. They don't have any matchups that could justify being on pay-per-view.
But they mentioned yesterday about
it just
doing
seemed
a pay-per-view.
Like, okay, next year. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, exactly.
Which,
but,
you know, it could be the left hand not telling the right hand what it's doing, and the commentators don't know what the hell is going on.
But, you know, I've said this before about some of these Crawford fights, and, you know, the possibility when Lomachenko versus Teofimo was announced. It's like, if ESPN had, you know, an underwhelming result for the Crawford-Khan fight, you know, Fury Wilder, I think, did well based on what it should have done. But, you know, we heard beforehand all these crazy projections and network expectations for pay-per-view sales, which I always thought were insane. Like, you know, 2 million buys or, you know, well over a million or one and a, you know, it's
that's
like,
because Top Rank got punked by Fury's team.
Well, or yeah,
how do you think
know.
They
I mean,
inserted
that's...
themselves into this? They weren't supposed to be involved in this.
That the point is, though, that's complicated. So
definitely,
you know,
complicated.
I just, you know, regarding doing like Crawford against someone like
Daniel
Porter
Kinnear
or
showed
Furman.
Up with a machete and was like, oh, you want Fury?
At want Top Fury? Rank. I'm still sort of trying to just like tie the knot from what the topic was from before. But yeah, I don't think it's as simple as Top Rank not having faith in them. It's just the math gets very complicated to bring one of those PBC guys over. And, you know, if Crawford goes over to the PBC side, suddenly the math makes a lot more sense to have those fights actually happen.
But that's the one thing that it confounds me. And like, I mean, obviously I know what it is and I'm gonna play coy here, but why isn't there a call for Top Rank to just ship Crawford out? Send him over. Joshua Franco got shipped over to this Top Rank card to, you know, get rudely headbutted by whichever Maloney he was fighting last night. I think it was Andrew. Why can't we ship Terrence Crawford over? He's still got to get his cut. But why can't he just go fight on a PBC Fox or a PBC Showtime pay-per-view? I don't understand that. I really don't. He ain't signed exclusively to ESPN, I'll tell you that much.
When you're making upwards of $10 million for a fight, and you either could give 30% to Top Rank or not, you'd probably prefer not to do that. I mean, this goes back to our earliest conversations about Crawford leaving Top Rank for the PBC. It pretty much all centered around a Spence fight. Because, you know, when you're talking about a career high payday, which that fight almost certainly will be for Crawford, not necessarily Spence. Again, do you want to give away that 30%? It just
I get what you're saying.
For that one fight, I mean, Crawford Top Rank brings so little value to that, you know, which is another thing where you hear Top Rank's messaging this week where they're saying, you know, don't go over there. You have no guarantee you'll get the Spence fight. I mean, you know, you heard Aram say that so much. You know, Spence is afraid of Crawford or else he would have done the fight already. And, you know, this extremely closely mirrors the Timothy Bradley situation. This goes back a number of years.
With Amir Khan?
With Manny Pacquiao. After he had done the series of Manny Pacquiao fights, there was a lot of talk of whether, you know, this was when the PBC was ramping up. All the, you know, this goes back that far that all the welterweights were getting signed by Al Haymon. And basically, Bradley decided to retire and take a broadcasting deal with Top Rank. You know, they weren't with ESPN specifically at that point, but sort of, you know,
if I
stay
could
correct
in the you a
family,
little bit, Bradley re-signed with Top fights. Rank first. And then after one fight, I believe it was, he retired.
Sure. Yeah. So he did still have one fight left. But the point was, he if he had gotten a Floyd Mayweather fight, he would have made by far more money than Top Rank at that stage.
If he had fought Thurman, he would have made. Well, actually, no, we can't say that because he did make a lot of money fighting Pacquiao. But like, let's say what he was due to make fighting like the Brandon Rioses of the world and Jesse Vargas.
Yeah, I'm specifically reminded of the end of his career. This was the very end of his career. There was a specific I didn't, you know, specifically plan to talk about this, so I didn't bring the dates up. But there's a specific point at the end of his career when he signed his last Top Rank contract. And,
yeah, I talked
know,
about
people,
this, I don't know, on the Patreon.
Yeah, like, whenever this was, but yeah. But yeah, I mean, it was basically the point was you have on one side a Floyd Mayweather fight potentially, or this more guaranteed money with Top Rank. And he basically gave that as his reason that he's like, if I sign with the other side of the street, there's no guarantee I'll even get the Mayweather fight. You know, and you look at an example of that was like a mirror. You know,
yeah,
that's not
Al
necessarily...
Haymon is known for lying to people when they sign with him and not giving them the fight that they originally was sold on.
I think you're being sarcastic that he has a good reputation.
I'm being very sarcastic.
Yeah, but I mean, that happened specifically with Amir Khan. Amir Khan continued to think that he was going to get a Floyd Mayweather fight. And, you know, who knows how much he has to blame for him not ever fighting Floyd Mayweather. But, you know, that was basically, you know, Bradley's stance. So, you know, they're kind of playing the, you know, and that was from Top Rank. Top Rank said, don't go over there. You're never going to fight Mayweather, you know. And who knows if that ever would have happened. But, you know, in this case, he's saying, don't go over there. You're never going to fight Errol Spence. So, okay. Anyway, I've been talking for like 10 minutes. I don't know, Lex, any thoughts on this stuff? Or are we ready to move on? I mean,
no, I'm, you said a lot. I'm just, you know, I'm ready when you guys are.
I mean, look, the thing is here, we all know, like, you're stupid if you don't think that the best move for Terrence Crawford would be to somehow gain his independence. And, I mean, look, this is the best move for almost all fighters. Gain your independence and do what makes sense on a fight-by-fight basis for your career. Now, naturally, I don't think anybody's going to truly go fight-by-fight unless they're desperate. I think most of the time you're going to see networks want to see some, you know, somewhat long-term commitment, at least two or three fights, you know, just so that they can make sure that they can get their money's worth if there's happens to be a failure at some point. But two or three fights, you know, you can roll with that. And I think that would be the best move. I mean, like, look, for Crawford to not have Top Rank involved or even to have him involved, it makes sense. Like, not even to even go into the Spence fight, but imagine how much money he makes running the gauntlet of the PBC welterweights. All of those fights are big fights. They're fights that people want to see, and they would all represent the best fight, the best opponent of Terrence Crawford's career. If he were to fight Keith Thurman and Sean Porter, those would be the best names and best wins on his resume should he be victorious against them. And ultimately, of course, we know what the end goal is. It is Spence. Assuming Spence beats Danny Garcia, there's no guarantee of that. But that would be, I mean, think of how much money Crawford makes fighting Porter, Thurman, and Spence in a row. That's more money than he's made in his entire career.
You know, I just want to throw in, this topic is tricky for me because when
you're
Bud
a Terrence Crawford
first,
fanboy.
Crawford's
yeah, you
great.
You're a family member.
Crawford is great, but it's hard for me because when he first re-upped with Top Rank, it seemed very obvious what he should have done or what he should have did, who he should have signed with, and he went the opposite direction. Even though most people in the boxing community, as far as I could see, was telling him to go to PBC. And so, like, we've laid out a lot of what's going on behind the scenes and in the future, but it still all comes down to Bud. And, like...
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, listen, I want to see the fights you just named. Like, Bud versus Danny, they split into amateurs. It has a great history. Sean versus Bud, they're best friends, but they're still down to fight. Great story. Errol versus Bud, great story. There's not much. I mean, the YouTube clip has like millions of views of them like arguing backstage. But if he doesn't want to go, then it's just like he'll be stuck on Top Rank fighting Castillo Clayton. And
ain't no guarantee he gets that fight. But I mean, like, look, what if he were to... you know, sign with PBC and he could fight Gary Russell Jr.
If we was to fight right now on the streets, I'll break your fucking neck.
Then finally, this Crawford could come out. No, look, I gotta throw this out, and I think we'll finish up here on this subject. There's a lot of reasons for him not to, and people have to be okay with this. Like, you totally gotta be okay with Terrence Crawford is actually in a pretty good situation. Like, think about this. He's in such a good situation that his promoter isn't happy with the situation because he knows, damn, we lost here. They got us. We signed a bad deal. We are not getting a positive return on this deal. And so, what if, you know, we got BOMAC, who is Terrence Crawford's manager. He probably feeling himself thinking like, you know, we got $5 million to fight Kell Brook and the deal's going to go a little longer. Why don't we just keep rolling with this? Like, yeah, it'd be great to fight these PBC guys, but like, we're getting $5 million over here. Like, you may have false confidence that Terrence Crawford's check is indicative of what Top Rank is willing to pay his opponents, which apparently it is nowhere close to that. They're not willing to shell out big time for opponents, you know, for like a Keith Thurman or a Danny Garcia. There's a lot of reasons to just say like, hey, we're comfortable right now. We can have, we got however many fights at this rate. Why would we want to go give up? We got, you know, let's just say he's due two more fights with Top Rank. That's $10 million. That's easy money on the table. We're getting it no matter what. It may not be smart to gamble on yourself at this point in time. Now, I don't know if that's true, but I think it's something that you have to consider. Because as much as they say all this stuff, up until recently, they didn't appear too serious about it because they weren't getting lawyers involved. And we know when boxers are serious about making a change in their career, they do get lawyers involved, as evidenced by Canelo and Mikey Garcia in the past, and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and all these other dudes who brought in the legal team to get what they wanted for their careers. So,
yeah, let me just jump in here for once, because this is the same note I wanted to end on. You know, we don't always need to be shitting on Top Rank. I mean, you know, as just to be clear, I mean, when we're talking about it making more sense for Crawford to have gone to the PBC originally and for, you know, make more sense to be the PBC now, it's like, it's not like Crawford was signed with Don King and, you know, got a career high purse of $250,000 and got it stolen from him. You know, think of like Amir Imam or someone like that. You know, he's gotten a lot of money. He's gotten a significant percentage of what he could have made if he was with the PBC or if he had signed a big, you know, ridiculous deal with Dazen, like, you know, Mikey Garcia had, or like Triple G got, or, you know, some of these crazy purses in the last 3 years. It's like, yeah, okay, he could have made more money if he had signed with someone else then. That was not very good management by his team, but he still made a significant percentage of what he could have made. You know, he's 33. He's still undefeated. He's in a position to make a lot of money in his next few fights. He's well positioned to let his contract run out and do that. Or, you know, again, if he could renegotiate, I mean, I totally agree with that. If he could continue to get this deal at this point to fight nobodies, that's not bad. But, you know, you'd have to think if he has enough faith in himself that he's willing to, you know, take a fight with better than 10-1 odds, you know, or, you know, he doesn't need to be in those types of matchups. He could make a lot more money being at the PBC. But it's like, you know, he's still in a reasonably good situation. Again, this isn't like, you know, someone being tied to a slave contract to Don King or like Murad Muhammad or something like that. Anyway, I just wanted
Did
to get that out there.
Did you just name drop Manny
on.
Pacquiao's old promoter?
Yeah, I was looking that up earlier today. You know, let me just say why I brought that up. This is very quick, but it's why I was looking it up earlier today. Because, like, speaking of Top Rank, has this weird like self-mythologizing. Like, they talk about Manny Pacquiao like they promoted his entire career, but Murad Muhammad was his promoter up through, like, I think by the time he moved up to lightweight, you know, so he had like all of his fights with Barrera, Juan Manuel Marquez, Morales. I mean, you know, he still fought those guys again later, but, you know, he had this huge series of fights, got up to the pay-per-view level with Murad Muhammad as his promoter. You know, a lot of those were co-promotions with Top Rank because Top Rank controlled the opponents. But, you know, it's just weird, like, you know, they'll do interviews where they'll talk about, you know, bringing up and discovering Manny Pacquiao, and that's not the origin story of the beginning of his career at all.
Wasn't Manny's first fight in the U.S. on a Don King card?
Yeah,
Hopkins Trinidad, maybe.
I don't remember.
No, it was a heavyweight card. It was a Tyson card, I think.
The Ledwaba fight.
Yeah,
the famous Ledwaba fight. Yeah. Yes, I
imagine like you never have, like, you know, you're doing commentary and you've never seen those two names, and you got Lelo Ledwaba and Manny Pacquiao.
Oh, well, yeah, the commentary is hilarious. I mean, yeah, that is how it played out.
Wrong.
They didn't know how to pronounce them, their names at all.
It was a De La Hoya fight.
Okay. Golden Boy or still Top Rank at that point?
I don't know.
I'm looking it up right now.
Because it lists Muhammad, it lists Univision, it lists Form Boxing. This is in 2001.
Matchmaker Ludabella, Javier Castillejo. I think that was not Top Rank.
Yeah, I don't think it was. I think he must have recently just split. When did he? Yeah, I don't think he was already gone from Why do we have a producer if he's not going to Google stuff like this? Why are we doing this? All right, we have to move on. Let's keep it short. What do you think? What do you think is realistically next for Crawford? Lex?
I mean, if his date is what? Supposedly 8 to 12 months from now, so he'll have another fight with Top Rank, right?
Depends. Depends what you believe.
Oh, what do I believe? Wow. Okay. He'll have another fight versus nobody, and then off to the races, I guess. We'll see if he gets to PBC or sticks with Top Rank. I hope he goes to PBC, but I'm not overly optimistic. How's that?
That's fine. What about you, Tom?
Well, if you listen to Bob Arum, he's fighting Manny Pacquiao in an unspecified in Arab country. This is why I like doing the podcast, because, you know, we think about this stuff, we talk about it on the Discord, but you kind of get to different places in your thinking just from having these discussions. I mean, the more we've talked about this, it seems pretty inconceivable he won't end up with the PBC. It just then gets down to, you know, the devil's in the details. I mean, part of it will be like, what happens with Errol Spence? You know, does he look like the old Errol Spence, or does he fall apart in some way where that fight won't be palpable? And, you know, it's like, okay, there are a million different X factors, but, you know, there's a question of next year. Does it get to a thing where, like, his contract is out at the end of the year, and Top Rank owes him two more fights, but he's able to negotiate, like, an earlier exit if they don't, you know, at that point, why would Top Rank want to pay for $2-3.5 million fights if he's just then going to leave, you know? So maybe they can, you know, cut back on that money and give him an earlier release. So I think we'll start to get a better picture of that after the Errol Spence fight. At this point, I'm pretty confident Errol Spence is going to look like, you know, significantly like his old self, but, you know, we have to let that play out. And I think as soon as that happens, things are going to really start to heat up. I mean, another thing is what's happening with Manny Pacquiao. You know, he's not going to return to the ring until next year. What does that look like? So there are a few things that need to fall into place, but I think most likely Crawford will end up with PBC, and I don't really understand why Top Rank would even bother paying a $3.5 million guarantee for those fights. I mean, I think at this point,
higher
if you're writing
than three and a half, stop saying that.
I don't know. I keep hearing 3.5 is the minimum.
Lex, could you tell this guy I know more than
five
he's reading
for the Amir Khan fight, with that being on pay-per-view, which, you know, presumably has a higher guarantee for pay-per-view fights.
You're going to have to trust that I got the sources here. It's not 3.5.
Okay, well, some amount. Okay, it's 3.5 and 1 cent.
I think Top Rank would be a little quieter on the subject if it was 3.5.
Well, okay. I don't know, four. Whatever you want to do. I mean, you're making that strengthens my point. My point is that I think they'll be reluctant to pay that much money for nothing fights that serve no strategic purpose for them if he's just going to leave anyway. So that's my thinking, is that even if sort of the contract could potentially extend out through the end of the year, I think, you know, there's a possibility we could see it negotiated earlier and then that, because it doesn't make sense for them to be doing these fights they're losing money on.
All right. So you two both have fairly conservative answers, you know, pretty obvious. Like, that is, if you follow out the logic, that is where you'll inevitably lead either one of your points. I think since you guys took the easy answers, I'll give a different one. And it's something that I think is unlikely, but if this unfolded this way, I don't think anybody would be shocked. I think where he goes next is at some point, I think he, and there's many reasons why I would say this, but I think ultimately, I think he fights Virgil Ortiz next year. And this is what they're going to sell him. They're going to sell him Virgil Ortiz, this golden boy, you know, rising star, blah, blah, blah. I think Virgil Ortiz signing with MTK, Rich Mirigan or whatever his name is, it seems to be very close with Top Rank, and he is their yes man, and he brings his guys over on good deals. I think this is a fight that fans would want to see, even though Virgil Ortiz is going to get demolished by Crawford. But I think this is something that if you're going to hitch your hat on, or I don't know what the phrase is there, I think this might be a potential avenue that they would explore. Golden Boy is desperately looking for a landing spot. I think this whole Canelo situation is bound to have some really bad repercussions for them. I obviously think that as long as, well, I don't know how long their deal is going to last over there, but the money that that they're getting is probably going to be cut significantly, and they're going to be looking for a way out, maybe a new network and maybe a new home. And they may be thinking that there's a spot for them at ESPN, maybe even working alongside Top Rank. So I don't know. I have a weird feeling about this. The other option is that they just go with Jose Ramirez and say, Ramirez, sorry, you're not going to fight Josh Taylor. Go and fight Terrence Crawford instead. And I've been saying this for a while. And if I'm wrong here, I'll be glad, because I don't want to see that fight. I don't think Ramirez stands a chance against Crawford. But it is another avenue that they could go. And if I was thinking, like, if I was in Top Rank's position, I was like, oh, how am I going to keep this guy? This may be something that I would inquire about, because if I clearly don't want to engage in good faith negotiations with Porter or Thurman or any of these guys, this may be something that I want to do. And it seems like it'd be a lot cheaper and not be as big, but it's still fairly big for Terrence Crawford, given his recent opponents. All right, well, let's move on. We will talk about now what I thought was a very funny fight. Joshua Franco and Andrew Maloney, no contest. So if you didn't watch the fight, you don't know what happened. I will spare you, I say probably like 45 minutes of your life that you'll never get back. Now, the fight wasn't bad, okay? Here's what happened, though. After two rounds, the fight was stopped because Joshua Franco, his eye like swelled up really bad, couldn't see out of it, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So in the first round, there was a headbutt, which Timothy Bradley blatantly called out. Okay. Go back and watch it. It's really funny. He calls it out. Then they start to notice that his eyes are swelling and it's getting pretty bad. Then Timothy Bradley says, that's a punch. That's a punch. Which, you know, directly conflicts with what he had said in the first round, that it was a headbutt, but, you know, we'll put that aside. And so they say, okay, the fight's over. It's the conclusion. No decision, no contest, because, we hadn't gone four rounds yet. So then they spend 25 minutes, and I don't even know if they did an official review, because as Joe Tessitore pointed out, the orange light never went on, but, apparently they were doing reviews for 25 minutes, where they just kept reviewing the broadcast to see if there was an accidental headbutt. Did they find the headbutt? I don't know. They might still be looking. What we did see is that Andrew Maloney had hit Joshua Franco with a jab. The thumb part of the glove basically went in his eye. And then fairly shortly afterwards, you can see that his eye was then swelling up. And so it was just comedy, because like nobody knew what was going on. I thought it was completely ridiculous that the commission were allowing Bob Arum to talk to them. Like, that seems like a major conflict of interest. The promoter should never interact with the commission officials on fight night, or I mean, really ever. But you know, if we have to give them a little bit of space, just on fight night. And so, I mean, my question to you guys, based off of what you saw, how bad, or, I mean, did they mess up at all? How bad did the commission mess up, or did they not mess up?
Lex, you go first, yeah.
I mean, to be honest, like, did they mess up? The more and more people I talk to about the fight, the more people I see saying that it was a punch, not a headbutt. But, like, I feel like nobody knew what the hell was going on. Like, the whole review process was so poorly executed. I also agree that Bob had no business running around screaming at everybody. And to be honest, like, that doesn't help the review process at all. I didn't like how the broadcast crew handled the process. And after like 10 minutes, I was like, I don't care what happens to this fight. I just want it to be over. And so, yeah, I don't know. The whole situation was weird. I mean, not the cleanest answer for me. But, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't too happy with how it was handled.
The delay was long enough that it just kind of beat any interest you had of the resolution. So it's like, God.
It was frustrating. And, you know, like I said earlier, like, as it played out, the broadcast crew, man, ESPN's broadcast crew is tough. Like, Tim Bradley, some of the stuff he says is just, like, ridiculous at times. Same with Ward, same with Tessitore, same with Kriegel. And, like, as this, it's like 10 minutes go by, 15 minutes go by, 20 minutes go by. It's just like, oh my God, please, just just call this fight off. Who cares? And I don't know. It's not who cares because it was a big fight, but tough 45 minutes or whatever it was.
Here's something I'll say about this. I thought Top Rank completely botched this. They got so caught up in like the result that they wanted to see, and then further like thinking the commission was nuts and that they were wrong. I think they completely botched this. Like it was tiring to watch, because it's like, look, it's one thing to see people who are bad at their job do their job, okay? Like there was a really funny point where, like, at this point I knew this is just a mess. Robert Byrd is sitting at the replay thing, you know, looking at the three monitors. But the monitors were actually showing, so the camera was looking at Robert Byrd, and the monitor he's looking at is of him sitting at the thing looking at the monitors. I was like, wow, okay, this is not good here. But, you know, here's the thing. I immediately would have went into rematch mode. We got to do the trilogy. There's been no conclusion. Andrew Maloney looks like he was on his path to winning a world title. He looked like he was going to, you know, reverse his fortunes from the first fight, blah, blah, blah. I would have went into sell mode for the next fight, because clearly you weren't, this was not the resolution. Even if that thumb was, or the swelling was ruled from a punch and Maloney would have won, I still wouldn't have been happy with the result. Because you did not see that Andrew Maloney was the better fighter. He landed a jab with the stump to the eye. That didn't say he was the better fighter tonight. I would have won. And the first fight was a very good fight. It was very entertaining. You know, maybe you want to, I would have went into run this back. These two guys are very skilled guys at 115. This fight needs a third one, blah, blah, blah. I would have went into that. I would not have done all this, oh my God, I can't believe the commission, blah, blah, blah. Because I also think that turns people off of boxing. That makes people want to, like, point to all the old tropes that aren't true about boxing, which is, like, it's fixed, it's rigged, or, you know, there's too many this and that. It's just too much. So that's how I felt. You know, I don't really care if it was going to be a no contest or a win for Maloney, because to me, it's like, there's no real resolution here. And I would like to see these guys actually get a proper 12-round fight, and we'll see, you know, what's what. Because these guys put on a really good fight in the summer. I thought we were going to get something like that too, and we didn't get that. This was, I mean, these guys weren't even warm yet. What about you, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've already touched on most of it, but I mean, it's just the comedy, the whole thing. You know, ESPN, you have the main broadcast. Again, this is on ESPN. They're just doing two fights. You have a fight come on, which is like a super flyweight fight, which you'd feel like is already kind of an uphill battle for like a standard ESPN viewer to have a weight class this small. And then you have this crazy thing happen. I mean, you know, like, how long was it until the main event came on? I mean, it's just like, it's so crazy what their broadcast ended up being. I mean, just the low quality of what they delivered for the broadcast by, you know, not having more fights, not having any swing bouts. You just had this one weird fight. I mean, as far as like the resolution, I mean, I just feel like the reaction is so weird relative to what it is. I mean, this is a super flyweight WBA regular title fight. It's like astounding to me that people are reacting the way that they are. I mean, it's like there were headbutts. There did appear to be like a thumb jab. There was a lot of swelling. I mean, you know, I saw on Twitter, you guys might not have seen this yet, I think this was just later today, that apparently there's a fracture, which would seem to point to it being a headbutt. I mean, I'd say one way or another. I mean, you know, you're talking about a couple of rounds of action of super flyweights. You know, the notion that this purely happened because of jabs, I think is just idiotic. Anyone who would say that this was the result of clean punching and the correct outcome is a TKO victory. I mean, that's just, to me, very silly. I mean, and just to clear some stuff up, people seem to be confused about. I mean, the whole thing with the review process is they start with the ref's call, and then their standard is to only overturn it if there's an extremely clear answer. And, you know, there are other situations where this, like you have in this case, headbutts and jabs and heavy swelling as the result of that. You know, it's not like, you know, originally a call was said to be from a punch, and then you have a replay that clearly shows a headbutt and tearing and then bleeding afterwards. You know, this was not a thing where there's like a clear night and day thing. And the amount of emotion people had saying, you know, this is bullshit, it's a robbery, I mean, it should be a TKO win. I mean, why should it be a TKO win? Why is that the better outcome for this situation? I mean, a no contest seems like the correct outcome for what happened to me. As you said, why not just do a third fight? I mean, I know it's not that simple in terms of fighters, you know, who's getting paid? Was there a clause for another fight? You know, they're separate promotional entities, so that could lead to difficulty. But again, it's a WBA regular title fight, and something weird happened, and there was a no contest as the official result. Like that, I mean, I'm just astounded that anyone is really that upset about this.
Yeah, I think that is the best place, or I mean, it's a good take and the place to leave it is like, people really got up in arms about this, and like, it really wasn't the biggest deal, because I think like inevitably they're going to do a rematch either way. So, I guess it depends
on, you know, who signed with who and what they're going to do. But I mean, it's like, you'd have to think like, there's just not that much money in this 115-pound WBA regular title fight. It's just weird to me this is being treated like it's huge business. And just one last thing. I mean, yeah, you mentioned like, I mean, just the weird technical issue that apparently they could only watch ESPN's broadcast. I mean, how crazy is that? I mean, Nevada basically blamed ESPN and said, you know, it was supposed to be their job to provide us a feed of the footage. And I guess for some reason, they were not able to give them just footage of the you know, the fight, like from the truck. Like, they had to literally show on an ESPN broad. I mean, that's so crazy. I mean, that's probably the craziest part of the whole thing, that they literally, ESPN with 80 million subscribers, that was the only way that they could do the replay, was to control ESPN's broadcast feed. I mean, that's so insane. Like, anyway, I mean, I guess that goes without saying. I don't really need to prosecute that point, but it's just nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I don't got much else to say, so we will move on. So this week we learned that Canelo's next move may be back where he originally was, which is different opponent. That there's talks moving forward about Canelo potentially fighting Callum Smith back on DAZN, which is, you know, he sued to get free from them, but now he's going back. So the real question is, like, does this move make any sense to you? Like, how do you find some justification for why this may be his next move, when obviously everybody thought the best move was that he was going to wind up fighting Caleb Plant, which is a guy that he is on the record saying he wants to fight. This appears to be a guy that he maybe has less interest in fighting. What do you think, Lex?
I mean, I guess it depends on whether or not Canelo signs with DAZN or Eddie Hearn or whoever long term, or is it just like a one-off fight? If it's a one-off fight, I could see it kind of making sense, because, you know, maybe they didn't have enough lead time for a Plant pay-per-view, which, in my opinion, on whether it's on Fox or Showtime, that's a huge fight. Like, I love the concept of a Canelo versus Plant buildup. In my opinion, Canelo has never faced someone that is going to, like, talk trash and engage the fans and, like, look good on the other side of a of like an all-access or 24/7. And I don't know if there would have been enough time.
You're leaving out Floyd, but go on.
But he wasn't the A-side in that fight.
I see what you're saying. You're right.
This will be Canelo's first B-side opponent where, like, he's gonna talk about his daughter. You're gonna see Jordan Hardy looking nice and cute. You're gonna see him driving his like Porsche or his lowrider or whatever cars he has. Like, it'll be a really cool thing. And I you know, December, like mid-December, late December, I don't know if there's enough time for a big buildup. So, you know, maybe in Canelo's world, he's looking at it like, you know, I'll do one fight on his own, clean up a couple belts, and then we'll revisit the Caleb Plant thing in 2021. But if he's going to DAZN and it's like a long-term deal, I don't want to say Canelo's career would be over, but like the days of Canelo being like this super huge big deal, it won't be like that anymore. If he signs multi fight with DAZN, I don't like it.
Tom, you're muted.
This goes back to when we talked about this the last time, you know, where I said there's sort of two possibilities for Canelo's next step, you know, whether he would go to the PBC and this would be the start of like a long-term relationship, you know, with him having an advisory contract with Al Heyman, with there being Canelo promotions, and we start to see cards where, you know, you have Canelo fighters and this could pave the way for other people in the Reynoso camp to be on those cards and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, I said at the time, you know, there's that sort of pie in the sky PBC fanboy sort of dream outcome where you have like a clear kind of Hispanic label that was originally supposed to be Golden Boy before Oscar rejected a $100 million offer, blah, blah, blah. You know, and you have another version of it, which, you know, would also be very smart in terms of Canelo running his career, where he's just saying, you know, I'm just going to do one fight at a time. Give me an offer for, you know, basically where he does business with the opponent's promoters. And he says, just, you know, present me with an opponent and an offer and I'll just do one fight at a time, you know. And it looks like at least for the immediate, his goal is to get back into the ring and get paid, you know, $20 to $30 million before the end of the calendar year if he can. You know, you guys already covered, and I had already mentioned this earlier, why it wouldn't make sense to do Caleb Plant under that situation. You know, Heyman has enough power. He has enough guys. Eventually, Canelo is going to need or, so say, want to come through him. It doesn't make sense to just cash in these guys on short notice. You know, either David Benavidez or Plant or, you know, anyone else who might fight on that platform. But if Canelo's saying, great, I want to fight before the end of the year, someone's going to pay me $30 million or, you know, whatever it is, even if it's $25 million, and I don't have to get locked down. I mean, there's, you know, this is something people seem to really not understand, but from a financial standpoint, there's a significant difference of whether it's one fight with one price versus, you know, being locked down for a multi-fight deal. Yeah, I mean, that could end up being DAZN. I mean, I could also see DAZN spending a lot more than they would have wanted to otherwise, just as a face-saving measure, because, I mean, it was such a PR debacle, the notion of Canelo leaving and not fighting on their airwaves again. If they can get him back and overpay for one fight, they can start to, you know, sell the story that he'll fight on there multiple times. They also have a non-zero chance. I mean, Canelo would come in as a huge favorite over Callum Smith. But, you know, that gives them a non-zero chance to get a win over Canelo, in which case that would shift a huge amount of equity over to them in terms of, you know, Callum Smith being undefeated and having that win. So, you know, there's the gamble and having the chance at that. So, you know,
that would be so DAZN, by the way.
What would be so DAZN?
Like you just said, it would be big for DAZN to get the win over Canelo. Like, I'm paraphrasing. But like,
yeah,
that would be a very DAZN-ish move to, like, you let Canelo go, one fight deal. Canelo kicks one of your big fighters' asses, and then he gets out of there.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, that would be very much along the lines of like Eddie Hearn having Kell Brook fight Triple G and Spence. You know,
well, how about
effectively
this?
Ending his career.
Canelo fought Kovalev, and DAZN offered him a deal for losing. Like, shouldn't it be the other way around?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's complicated, and it has to do with main events having like no company anymore at this point, you know. You know, but anyway, that's what I have to say about that. I could definitely see that making sense for Canelo's immediate move. And, you know, I think it makes it much more likely, if that is what he wants to do, that he's going to look at the next few years of his career in terms of one fight at a time, as opposed to some grand overall PBC deal, which, you know, I acknowledged at the time could be more of a fanboy dream than a reality. Or we could see something like that happen, but just, you know, over a longer term, and his immediate goal is just to get paid before the year is out and not waste, you know, his whole year, or not waste all the training that he's done, you know, if he's ready to fight. So that's what I have to say about that.
Here's my concern. I think everything you guys said, I agree with it. I think it makes sense, blah, blah, blah. I can see the justification, the reasoning for potentially fighting Callum Smith when it seemed like that Caleb Plant fight, which I said at the time, we did. Oh, actually, we recorded a podcast, you know, when Canelo got his freedom, blah, blah, blah. But I forgot to hit record. But I said on it, I said, you know, we talked about, you know, what could potentially happen. And Mike Coppinger tweeted out about Caleb Plant. And I said, I don't think so. I don't think so. Like, when were they going to do that fight? It didn't make any sense to me. It was too close. And furthermore, like, Fox had already nixed the Wilder Fury date for December. All of a sudden, they were going to go back on that and look stupid to Deontay, to look stupid to ESPN, who was their broadcast partner for that fight, and say, oh, but for Canelo, we'll do it. No, they didn't do it for a reason. And I just said, like, you know, look, this is a speculative tweet that's being passed off as a sources tweet. And yeah, you know, form that impression. But ultimately, I was skeptical of it. And I think it makes sense because, you know, if you want to get paid quick, you want to, you know, you haven't fought since in over a year. You want to get that money. Okay, fine. Whoever's willing to put up for December, I'm going there. So for Canelo, it makes sense. But something we haven't talked about, and I think is something that we do need to talk about, especially as we are nearing Spence Garcia, which is the next significant fight that is going to take place in this country that will have a crowd. I don't know if you guys have been paying attention, but these COVID numbers are, they're getting up there. We are.
Yeah, that's not lost on me.
We are at a point, and if you're, you know, you don't really follow this stuff too much, don't worry, I got you. The numbers right now are worse than they were at any point during the summer. We are like approaching levels that are like when this was popping off in New York. The death rate isn't as high, but it is steadily climbing. And it is like a massive difference from what it was a couple weeks ago. I don't know whether it was Halloween or something, but we are at the point where cases are increasing at a rapid rate. We have Thanksgiving coming up, and after that, it'll be the holidays. I mean, I have not been affected by COVID whatsoever, in the sense that I don't know anybody who, thankfully, you know, I don't know anybody who's gotten COVID. Until this week, when three of my family members came down with COVID. Now, they're all okay, you know, good for that. They'll be fine, I believe. But the cases are getting pretty crazy. And so I'm really skeptical. And, you know, if you are one of my friends, we've maybe talked lately and I've given you my whole thing on here. And I can't say the whole thing because, you know, I don't really want to mess with the direction of the podcast, but essentially I'm really skeptical that Canelo is going to fight this year. And while there may be an offer and all of this is going to sound good, I am skeptical about this fight happening. And the simple reason for that is, even though it's Texas, and I know, you know, Texas has just been going ham, I think at some point every state's going to have to open their eyes up and be like, hey, we got to close things down again. You guys were not good boys and girls. You weren't wearing your masks. You weren't going into big gatherings. You guys were doing this. Like, even, you know, like, obviously, I'm sure these events that, you know, the NFL have put on and PBC has put on, they've been well maintained and all this stuff. But I don't think that the show, we are far enough out from the show that there are a couple things that can happen. A, their protocol, their COVID protocols aren't going to get them sanctioned. Or B, we're just going to have a statewide shutdown in many states and you just won't be able to do an event with fans. And that's the thing. If you can't do an event with fans with Canelo, it ain't worth the money. And you're probably not going to do it. So I that is a concern I have. And I hope it's not true. I hope, you know, COVID was just, maybe we get a little momentary spike, but then it can go down. You know, everyone benefits from life going back to normal. But like, things are getting a little out of control right now, and it's getting colder. We're having holidays where, you know, you be with people, the people you love, people you know. I can see that that fight potentially just doesn't happen. Anything you guys want to say about this?
Lex?
I'm curious about the time frame, I guess. Like, how much time does Canelo have to make an announcement before it's a wrap? But
what about you, Tom?
No, I mean, it's good points. I mean, basically, my thinking was that he had said, going back to the summer, hearing about these days in negotiations, that he wanted to get a fight made regardless of, the situation with a live crowd. So I took that at face value. I mean, yes, you're talking about losing out on a few million dollars, but, how does he look at, I mean, I don't think he views a Callum Smith fight necessarily the same way that, like, Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao viewed their fight against each other as like a once in a generation mega fight. I think Canelo, I take him at his word, that came up during the negotiations, which was basically like he just wanted to fight for his guarantee and he was willing to get back in the ring, that he was basically willing to forego the live gate, which, yes, is significant. Yes, is more of a factor than any other fighter in the sport. But, basically that he has enough faith in his career. He'll make it up over the course of his career. He doesn't need to maximize that. Basically, he's more concerned with the fighting at this time and not losing the time in his prime versus losing an opponent. So that math makes sense to me more than it does. Although, again, I guess what I mean to say is I totally understand the argument there, but to me that math made sense. Just in general, yeah, it's like Texas is a mess. I'm totally like, if Spence Garcia ends up being in a studio, that wouldn't be incredibly shocking to me. But at the same time, these states are being just incredibly stupid with their COVID restrictions. I mean, I don't know if I'm offending anyone by saying that, but it's just pathetic that, people still can't grasp just wearing a mask as, simple community responsibility. I mean, it's ridiculous. But yeah, anyway, I mean, just also to say, I mean, kind of glossed over that a little bit, but I mean, I hope everyone in your family is okay. I mean, I've had extended family and, acquaintances who have who have had COVID. Only one person was it serious, and it was extremely serious for him. But he's recovered now. So, it's like, this is stuff we need to take seriously. But anyway, that's what I have to say about that.
Yep. All right. Okay. Let's move on. Tyson Fury will not be back. At least he tweeted he's not going to be fighting this year. He's going to be fighting in 2021, which, really messes with this whole situation because, Fury initially balked at the Wilder trilogy because he said he was not willing to wait. He wanted to fight in December. He wanted to fight in 2020. Interesting. Canelo, same thing. But now he's saying he's not fighting until 2021. By the way, I said, on a previous podcast when we talked about this, there's zero chance Fury will fight anybody in December. It won't be Deontay Wilder because we know that fight's not happening and he ain't fighting anybody else. Lo and behold, he has now announced that he is not going to be fighting until 2021. So you got to think that the Wilder trilogy is back on the table, right? Like, how do you not fight Deontay Wilder if your next fight is going to be, I guess said another way, like, how do you justify going into 2021, you no longer have that restriction of you need to fight in 2020 and not fight Deontay Wilder? I don't see how ESPN and Top Rank allow that to happen.
Yeah, Lex, this is your topic.
Yeah. It's like Fury is Fury. He is a very checkered past. And when this whole thing happened, he announced that he wasn't going to fight Wilder and he'll be fighting Caballero. I was never sold on it, and I found it very disingenuous the way boxing media handled it. And I also found it very funny how maybe Tom put this in the chat, but Chris Mannix is now like double backing, said many insiders in the boxing community never thought the Caballero fight would happen. Did either of you see that or no?
I saw that. But you guys know how I feel about that, or I felt about it.
What, that you never thought it was going to happen, right? Yeah.
Well, I like that he's finally giving Rollins his respect.
But But yeah, I mean, I guess I would just, you know, this is typical Fury behavior. I would say he's always doing weird things. You know, add this to the list. Is the Wilder fight on the table? As a Wilder fan, I'd hope so. But again, this is Fury. You never know what to expect. You never know what he's going to do. And based on the people who are behind him, you don't know what they want. They might not want the Wilder fight. They might want to just sneak out and hang around and wait for Joshua to handle his business. And then they could, you know, do their big fight. So I guess another, you know, wait and see. But I'm definitely rooting for the trilogy to happen.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't have much to say on this other than what I already said. I didn't think it was going to happen. My only thing is I hope that puts the trilogy back on the table. Because, I mean, I imagine that everybody involved, maybe except for Tyson Fury, that's what they want. That fight with Deontay was wildly successful.
You know, I will say also that, like, with all the stuff that Deontay's come out to say and all the UK people have come out to say about Deontay and what Fury said about Deontay, they've done a good job of generating buzz for the third fight. Like, now you could put this back on pay-per-view and it's like, okay, like, the bad blood has been reinvigorated. Like, there's a bit of a storyline. And also, like, I was doing some history lessons on the heavyweight division. It's a pretty big diva division. You know, I think because of Klitschko's reign on the division, we've kind of, like, lost perspective of what the division usually holds as far as, like, delayed fights, canceled fights. And just standard nonsense that comes along with this division. Lennox and Tyson took forever. Holyfield and Tyson took forever. Riddick Bowe and Tyson never happened. Riddick Bowe and Lennox never happened, right? Can someone correct me? Correct me, or am I wrong?
I think you're right.
And then going back, Ali and Frazier, their trilogy, it happened over like a six-year period. And so it's, you know, I think the heavyweight division is one filled with divas. And this is like, we're finally getting a taste of like our era's diva heavyweight behavior. Look, and I'm not going to point any fingers. Like, I'll leave it to the listeners, but
it's prize fighting, man. Like Floyd said, it's prize fighting. And when a lot of money's involved, you got to be not just a fighter, but you got to be a businessman. And I think that's what these guys are doing. And people are crazy to think that they're anything other. You have to be a businessman or you wind up in a Don King situation. Can't have it both ways. All right, let's move on.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Tom, you got something?
Yeah. I mean, I the thing with Mannix, I mean, many in boxing were highly skeptical of Tyson's Fury's announced plans. I didn't hear anything outside of like the Sunday Puncher family. As far as I'm concerned, most people took it pretty uncritically when they read it. And yeah. I mean, Lex and I have talked about this, I feel like almost on a daily basis since that like initial news came of just Fury announcing via Mike Coppinger he wasn't going to do the third fight. It's like the public narrative never made sense ever. You know, if you have, you know, ESPN, you know, you have the Walt Disney Corporation, you have Fox, in addition to the entities of PBC and Top Rank and MTK, all involved in negotiating this, Tyson Fury doesn't get to just say, I'm not doing this and have it go away. And yes, there are extenuating circumstances related to the dates and as it relates to COVID. But, you know, even the public story that was given was that Todd DeBuff and a representative from the PBC were negotiating and talking to the networks. The networks were the ones relaying what dates happened, what didn't. I mean, it never made sense that Fury would just walk away because, you know, again, the consequences of that would be very damaging for Top Rank's relationship with ESPN. It would be, you know, damaging for the PBC's relationship with Fox. But, you know, that's a separate issue from those guys. You know, they might not care about that. It would mean that no one from PBC would ever fight anyone from Top Rank ever again. You know, if they're just in the middle of good faith negotiations about deciding on a date and then they just say, oh, you know, here's the thing, we had these original dates before COVID happened and we're not going to do the fight anymore, like, you know, there would be such huge implications from that. I mean, as Lex and I had talked about it, you know, really more of our thought was, are they going to go straight into the third fight, or what they really talking about here being you know, basically this UK fight being an interim fight? You know, is this pure smoke and mirrors, or are they just doing an interim fight to make Tyson Fury, you know, $10 million or whatever? And, you know, we haven't gotten official confirmation about a third fight, but to me, it still seems very unlikely. You know, again, unless there's some huge other story going on in the background that we don't know about, seems very likely to me that they're going to do a third fight. I mean, I also just say to close, I mean, there's a similarity here with the Andy Ruiz, Anthony Joshua rematch, where, you know, there was a lot of hard negotiation between the two camps. There was a lot of hard negotiation related to the topic of doing the fight, you know, in Saudi Arabia, which I think was not really, at least in the view of the PBC side, not covered in their original contract for a rematch clause. But they ended up getting the fight done, and it coincided with Matchroom side filing legal paperwork. You know, pretty much as soon as that happened, the situation got resolved. You know, as soon as Wilder's side brought in a lawyer, they stopped the talk of the, you know, Fury doing this interim fight, or, you know, canceling the other fight. And, you know, I think it might just be a matter of weeks, or it might be a matter of actually finalizing the date. But I think any reasonable person would have to say the most likely outcome at this point is looking like a third fight.
All right. Well, I don't have no more to say on this, so let's move on to a little brief bit of news. Shakur Stevenson will step in on December 12th. Miguel Burchell tests positive for COVID. He was scheduled to fight Oscar Valdez on that date. So when I say he's stepping in for Miguel Burchell, that doesn't mean he's fighting Oscar Valdez, but instead he'll fight Toka Conclery, who you may remember was thoroughly beaten by Kid Galahad. So what's your assessment of this matchup?
Not according to Dan Kababia.
Ain't nobody care about him.
I couldn't resist throwing that in. You thought,
I blatantly set this up so somebody could mention that. So good for you. You took the bait. this isn't a good matchup. I mean, like, look, cool. Shakur Stevenson gets some credit here. He's stepping in. Credit to him for being in shape and ready to go at all times. I mean, I think he stepped in less than 6 weeks out. This is an okay level of opponent. It's not going to say much about Shakur Stevenson. And granted, you shouldn't expect that much. I mean, Shakur's only got a handful of fights still. Like, he's still a baby. He's still young. Yes, he has a title already, or had a title already. But I think we're in an era where it's getting easier to get a world title.
Can I ask a question? Quick interruption.
Yeah.
On a 1 to 10 scale, how satisfied are you with what Top Rank is doing with Shakur so far in his career?
I would say I'm not satisfied, but 1 to 10? I also have lower expectations. So I'd be like 5 or 6.
Tom?
I would say 8 or 9. With the caveat that I feel like, you know, it's like we were joking beforehand, what qualifies as overrated or underrated? I think Shakur Stevenson's, you know, resume so far is one of the most crazy overrated things in the sport. Few idiots have him on their top 10 pound for pound list, which is completely inappropriate. But yeah, given his age and, you know, I think the ability that he showed when he entered the sport, I'm totally fine with what Top Rank has done with him. I just think people are sort of absurdly overrate what he's done.
It's the whole if you build it, they will come thing. They praise him because of what they think he could be, not what he actually is. Okay, yeah. I mean, look, this is a whatever matchup. It's like nobody's going to go out of their way and cancel plans for this fight. Let's get on to the previews. We don't have much coming up next week.
Yeah, just very, I mean, a few more words about that. Look, it's very cynical. This is, again, you know, like, I know we don't love Box Rec rankings, but it's just a good, you know, measuring stick. It's just to throw out there. But, you know, he's number 84 in the Top Rank, or in the Box Rec rankings, Toka Conclery. Like, once again, just, you know, based on very unscientific algorithm or very imprecise algorithm, there are, you know, 80 fighters that they could choose that would be better than him. You know, this is, again, Top Rank is choosing a bad fighter to get the result that they want. You know, that is the one thing. I mean, Shakur is young, and I get frustrated about, you know, I say being sort of people wildly overrate his accomplishments. But at this point, you know, he's 23. He's still very young. But he's fought, you know, a bunch of guys who are absolutely no hopers, you know, outside of the top 100. And then he's fought two guys who are in the top 30, and both of those fights were distance fights. You know, I just think people go so insane over his career. I'm looking for him to fight more guys in the top 30, and that shouldn't be asking a lot, You know, that's really the bare minimum of what you should expect a fighter like this to fight. You know, and this, again, just the latest example of there are tons of better fighters they could have chosen, and they chose Togekon Clary. You know, it's, yeah, we have a right to ask for better fights than this for Shakur Stevenson. You know, that's my main thing. I don't worry about is Top Rank doing a good job or a bad job, but just, you know, as a fight fan, you know, it's like we just keep seeing these bad fights, and then they'll get excited about what happens. But, you know, when he's fighting Felix Caraballo, you know, and he knocks him out in six rounds, it's like, who cares? You know, when he fights Joe Gonzalez and it goes the distance, I don't really care about that performance. When he fights Christopher Diaz and it goes the distance, I don't really care about that performance. I mean, I still rate him as a prospect largely because he's so young, but he, you know, he just really hasn't put that much up on the board for me at this point.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I asked the question. Like, someone mentioned this to me a couple of days ago. I'm not going to say who they were talking about in particular, but they were like, I'm tired of watching this fighter fight guys that I haven't seen before, and when they're done fighting this guy, I probably won't see them again. And, like, which that kind of resonates with me with Shakur, and I think he's good enough to fight, like you're mentioning, like top 30 dudes we've probably seen a little bit of. You know, maybe they've won some, maybe they've lost some, but it's like a good measuring stick. I don't know why they keep giving Shakur these guys that, like, maybe I haven't seen enough of, what's his name again? Togekon Clary. Maybe I need to watch more of him, and I will do that before Shakur's fight, but I hate that I have to jump on YouTube. I wish that it was someone who I was familiar with, and I've seen them in action against big opponents and, like, what their faults are, so we could really see Shakur mix it up. So I hope that they start to accelerate Shakur. Like, I don't want to see him against these. For me, they're random. I don't know if they're random for you guys, but for me, they're random opponents.
I mean, in his last fight, he fought a guy who was 38 and 25. Random opponent is a good way to describe it. I mean, this is, you know.
I mean, they had an excuse there, but I don't think the fight is that interesting. Coming up this week, we have Oshaki Foster, who is a 130-pound fighter who believes that he is amongst, if not the best fighter in the division, he's up there. Do I agree with this? No. How do I know this? Well, he's going to fight Mickey Roman, who's like 55 and like 14 or something. And, you know, what is significant is this is the first Ring City episode, which is going to be a new boxing series on NBC Sports Network. This will air on Thursday. You know, I have a lot of reservations, skepticism about the ring theory, the Ring City concept. It sounds kind of hokey at times. It sounds kind of fabricated by internet boxing people. But I will give them credit because the commentary team sounds pretty good. Sean Porter is going to be on the call. They got Bob Papa, who used to call HBO Boxing After Dark. So, you know, I'm looking forward to this. I'm down with more weeknight boxing as long as it's not like summer series bad, but I'm down for it. You know, would anything you guys looking forward to looking towards for this fight or for this card?
It just seems like kind of low tier. I mean, it's weird that they called out Showbox, which is so weird because, I mean, Showbox is like a fight fan series that has been, over the course of the time I followed boxing, has always been undercovered relative to how I think it should be covered, which is, you know, I think it has its audience among boxing Twitter people. People on our Discord room will always, like, look forward to whatever is on Showbox. They have a reputation of, you know, it's like guys who don't necessarily have high-powered management and promotion being matched reasonably tough. And then occasionally you'll get, you know, some of the bigger promoters will do a show, but they'll still match guys pretty tough. I mean, Showbox has a good reputation in that way. But, I mean, this is, like, worse than – I mean, this is below what a Showbox would be. So it's weird that they specifically called out Showbox, and this is just, like – this is below that standard.
This is Friday Night Fights.
It is. So it's like
it's totally like kind of like sort of cast off prospect who's already taken a loss or two versus a guy who people might know, but he's like several years removed from even being close to his prime. That's what Mickey Roman is. Like, Mickey Roman had a little renaissance in, what, 2014? And 6 years have passed. And then Oshaki Foster has already taken a couple losses or one loss or something like that. He's not with anybody big. He's kind of like a fringe prospect. You know, if we're putting together a list of, like, the most talented young fighters in the sport, he's not making the list, you know, if unless we're going really deep. Like, this is Friday Night Fights.
Yeah, no, I mean, exactly. It's more Friday Night Fights than Showbox, or certainly more so than any other prestigious prospect type show. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I think it's funny that, you know, we're even talking about it this way, because I don't think anyone outside of boxing Twitter has even heard about it. And people on boxing Twitter don't even really seem to care about it. So, you know, it's more televised boxing for people who want, more televised boxing. It's there, you know, it's not really something to complain about, but it's just weird. Yeah, you know, but they came out like guns blazing at Showbox, which is like, people were like,
don't forget, why are you doing that? Being sued by Greg Cohen.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's where, I mean, Greg Cohen's not a good guy. I mean, you know, we were laughing about that when it happened, but it's like,
I mean,
you know,
am I siding with Greg Cohen here? You know, maybe.
Yeah, I know. But it's like, yeah, that, I feel like this is more to do with Greg.
Have I read the legal, you know, the complaint? Maybe.
But yeah, anyway, I've talked about it more than I should. It's just, yeah, it's Friday, as you said, Friday Night Fights. It's the YouTube prelim of like a Showtime card. It's the, you know, ESPN Plus prelim on a Top Rank card, except fighters with like even less potential.
It's like people from Reddit came together and like decided that they were going to make a boxing show and then got hit with reality once they tried to execute it. So it's a good idea on paper, but like it's proving to be somewhat difficult. But we'll see. You know, this could turn out to be a real asset to boxing.
Or turn out to be a meme.
Or turn out to be a meme. You know, who knows? Also on Saturday, Conor Benn will fight Sebastian Formella, who recently fought Sean Porter, went 12 rounds with him. Anyway,
I want to say one more thing about the Ring City thing.
Oh my
just because, like,
here we go.
No, I think this is, you know, look, if you're seeing like what the PBC has done on their big shows, you know, they'll have one or two or three sometimes like backup fighters on their undercard. If you look at like the very first Showtime card that they did, you know, like they were still able to maintain a world title fight. Like if they have a total of like four fighters on this card, I mean, it's like, what happens if someone tests positive for COVID? I mean, do they just cancel? I mean, there's a certain point where, you know, it's like, it's, you know, very hard for like up and coming promoters and smaller promoters to function in this climate. You know, I guess specifically this is a TV series and not a promotion, but it's like, it's just, I don't know. I can't imagine why this is the right time to do this. It just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And, you know, again, just with COVID being a specific complicating factor. Anyway, we can
look,
move on.
If somebody were to like drop out of the fight, they could sub you or me in and nobody would know the difference. Like, this is the level we're dealing with. This is not, you know, three fights with guys and the worst guys ranked number 20 in the division. We're not dealing with this level of boxing here. So you or me could fill in and people wouldn't know otherwise. Conor Benn, yep, he's going to fight Sebastian Formella. Real quick, guys. Do you think that if Conor Benn has a good performance here, people are going to like start taking it out on Sean Porter? Because he went 12 rounds against Sebastian Formella.
Well, I mean, well, yeah, I mean, Lex, you take this to start with.
I don't know. I mean, like, yes, there will be a community of people who, or a group of people who take on Sean Porter for not finishing off Formella. But, like, ultimately, like, the direction that the sport is going, I don't think, like, to quote Leonard Ellerbe, we don't care what Boxing Twitter thinks. I'll just leave it. I'll leave it at that.
No, that's a good point. I think that is a really good point. And he said Twitter boxing, not boxing Twitter.
Twitter boxing.
By the way, this was originally supposed to be the undercard for Dillian White versus Alexander Povetkin, where Dillian White was being sent out to be murdered again by Alexander Povetkin. You know, not so far out from the last time he got knocked out brutally.
I mean, you just have to, like, you have this weird thing where, like, Boots, like, Jerron Ennis was going to fight Formella.
He was never going to fight Formella.
Well, that was discussed for his December date. And, you know, to me, that would be perfect because, like, Porter clearly beat Formella. So there really isn't that much room for someone to look good against him or improve on that performance outside of, like, getting a stoppage. And that's exactly the kind of statement that Boots is trying to make at this point. To, you know, it was just like when Spence came up, you know, fight the types of fighters who have been in with other guys, other prospects, or other established fighters, except get the stoppage. You know, that would have been a good opponent for Boots, but it's not like Conor Bedd is good, though. You know, he's not good enough.
Conor Bedd is bad.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he might lose to Formella. So it's like,
he also might knock him out. You know, I think Conor Bedd's, like, really unorthodox and, like, takes some chances. But at the same time,
I mean, I don't think that's
performed
really
possible. Poorly in the past and damn near should have lost a 4-rounder where he fought I think it was a French guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right. I mean, that's the thing. It's like Formello is probably around 25, but I think Conor Bedd is, like, way worse than that. So it's just, like, it's weird. Like, I remember, like, people, whenever that was being discussed on boxing Twitter, will be like, ooh, you know, they sniped. They got the opponent out from under Boots. And it's like,
oh, Boots got the better opponent.
Really? I mean, well, yeah, I mean, like, who wins that? Like, okay, so you might get Conor Bedd beat by a nobody? Like, I mean, it's just one of the weirder, like, flexes we've seen in, like, it just makes no sense to me, but I don't know. Maybe they know something I don't know. I mean, if he does get a knockout, that would make him look good relative to Porter. You know, it's like, but it would just be so unexpected. I mean, no one considers Conor Bedd to be a serious prospect, so I have no idea why they're doing that fight, or again, why they would spend money and, like, outbid Showtime for it. It just makes no sense.
Yeah, Formella was never the opponent. Don't believe the rumors.
So you're just saying that the whole thing I just said, it's just boxing Twitter nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I believe you, but okay.
But by the way, Delorme is a better opponent than freaking Sebastian Formella.
That's true too. Yeah, I mean, this isn't Boots' fight weekend, but yeah, he is.
I actually don't know for sure that Formella, but, like, just looking at all the tea leaves there, I don't think Formella was ever going to be the opponent for Boots because I don't think PBC is, like, doing the matchmaking for Ennis. I think it is Showtime. And Showtime isn't going to go, like, it makes sense that they went with Delorme, who's a PBC guy, not Formella, who, you know, is just, like, the guy the IBF wanted Sean to fight. That's my thinking here. Also, talk about a guy who's been screwed over. Javier Fortuna will fight Antonio Lozada. That's on FS1 on Saturday night. Fortuna went from fighting, potentially, I mean, like, we can go back, but potentially he could have fought Tank. Potentially he could have been fighting Ryan Garcia, Jorge Linares, Devin Haney. Like, now this guy gets none of those guys. It appears that all those guys will be somewhat in the mix to fight each other. Javier Fortuna is the guy on the outside looking in. He'll fight Antonio Lozada, who, if you remember correctly, is the guy who stopped Felix Verdejo, who, you know, is now back to being the rising superstar after a KO1 on the summer series. Fortuna was supposed to fight Haney. Then he was supposed to fight Campbell. Then it looked like, you know, Ryan Garcia could potentially fight him. Now Haney's fighting Lozada. Oh, and they also actually made the Linares fight. So, big mess. Fortuna went from potentially being the WBC champion should he win the fight to maybe being the WBC diamond champion. And now he's fighting Lozada on FS1. So, sucks for Fortuna. This is obviously a bad situation, but I guess they're going to try to make the best of it. I imagine that they may have to still honor that contract to fight because he was scheduled to fight on Dazen. I don't know how this is going to play out. I also am not confident Fortuna wins. I think Fortuna is like one of those guys who makes a mess in his fights, and I would not be shocked if he lost his fight. Anything you guys want to say about Javier Fortuna?
Well, isn't that even Tom, not even happening this weekend?
Oh, no, it's happening.
Oh, that's... I thought that got... Okay, I'm not
Is it on the PBC website?
No, I have nothing to say. Yeah, but I thought... Didn't we talk about that beforehand that it got moved?
We were talking about Colbert. Colbert fight
Colbert
got moved.
Sorry. Okay. Content here. Sorry. No, I have nothing to say about that. I mean, it's like, Okay, Lozado stopped for Dejo. Great. You know, it's like, I have nothing to say about that.
Even
one.
A motorcycle couldn't stop Verdejo. That dude kept trucking on. But Lozada,
I'm sure he was down for a 10 count. So no.
I'm going to have to
view the tape. Let's get the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
The real takeaway for that card is that my boy Ray Guajardo is coming back. He is the future of 154. Everyone needs to watch out for him. Certified killer.
Yeah, there's no chance. I know you like him, and he's your little friend on Instagram, but Guajardo needs to learn how to defend himself. Austin Dulé is going to be on this card too. He's going to be fighting one of Samson's prospects, Starling Castillo. I mean, if this is, you know, basically a Samson card, Fortuna is a Samson guy. Castillo's a Samson guy. Who knows if this guy can pan out? He's undefeated. He's Dominican Republic, I don't even know how you say like Dominican. I guess Dominican Republican. That is a political affiliation. I don't know. Samson's got a lot of guys. Like, that's a guy whose stable has grown a lot over the past couple of years. And so, yeah, I mean, this should be a fun card. I think the main event could potentially be pretty entertaining. Javier Fortuna, I think, gets himself into trouble in fights sometimes. Y'all remember the Adrian Granados fight? No? Okay.
Yes, it was a sloppy mess. Yes.
Yeah, because he fights wild and reckless. I would actually like to say real quick, I love what PBC is doing with these little FS1 cards. I don't know if you guys have, like, I mean, I'm sure obviously you've noticed, but, like, am I alone in this? I'm really into, like, this prospect level showcase place for these fighters to, like, do their thing. And they're most of the time pretty decent fights.
Yeah, I mean, these are basically what the untelevised part of the undercards are now getting televised, and they're just these cards. I wouldn't even say that they're, like, They're just development, you know. That's all they are. Most of them. Some of the FS1 cards are a little better than development, but a lot of them
are like Samson getting guys from like Uruguay and being like, "Hey, let's see if these guys can fight." You know, they're matched sometimes, you know, tougher than you would expect for a prospect from that level because it's kind of like put up or shut up. And yeah, I mean, I think all of us, you know, you see Sean Gibbons in the corner with a fighter you've never seen before. You see Samson in the corner with a fighter you've never seen before. I think, you know, at least us in the PBC sphere, speaking for myself, you know, we always, you know, lean a little closer to the TV.
Except, what was the guy's name? What was his name? Except Marcos Escudero, who Samson is, you know, he's definitely on Samson's shit list. Yeah, so those are the fights this week. I hope you guys plan to tune in. I hope you guys, I don't know what we probably aren't going to recap them too in depth next week, because I know that based off of the way these fights pull in ratings, that you people aren't watching, not all of you, or maybe only all of you guys and none of the rest of the boxing fans. I don't know. So, Tom, Lex, thanks for coming on. This is another episode.
Oh, just one more quick thing you didn't get to. So the Spence preview coverage has started to come out. So that's just another thing to look for.
Yeah, I mean, if you're watching Fox, hopefully you start to see all of that stuff. I mean, you should be... I already talked about the Colbert card. We're being told to talk about that Colbert moved his card. Yes, he. Well, I mean, he didn't move it. Somebody involved who makes decisions moved that card to December 12th, I believe. And then the Donaire fight, which was that weekend, is moved, I believe, to December 19th on Showtime. Which I think that is when Boots is coming back. He'll fight Delorme. Something that I'm particularly interested in. Looks like Stephen Fulton got a date. And obviously he's probably fighting Angelo Leo, since they were supposed to fight until Stephen Fulton got COVID when he decided to open a restaurant and then, you know, have customers. Yeah, so that is all. The Spence Garcia coverage has, or the preview stuff has started, yes. If you like our podcast, you want more content, you can go over to patreon.com/sundaypuncher. Also, if you like the podcast, you don't want to do that, you could just leave a rating or review, 5 stars. Please do 5 stars. If you do 4 stars or below, that's pretty mean of you. I think you should talk to us and tell us what you want to hear, and we'll just do that, okay? Never mind. Lex, Tom, thanks for coming on. I hope you guys had a good time. We got some conspiracy theories this week. We listened to some music together before we started and had some fun with that. Found out what type of music Tom likes. Turns out that we played him a track off of Reasonable Doubt, and he's like, what is this? I don't like this.
You have to listen to that episode.
Tom,
that's all I can
did
say.
Not recognize when I played Happy by Ashanti. I don't know what Tom is thinking, where he's been his whole life, but he did react very there was a very positive reaction to Third Eye Blind. So with that said, thanks guys for coming on. We will be back next week. It'll probably be me again and our resident Dave Matthews Band fan Tom.
Always good times.
Satellite in my eyes, like a diamond in the sky. How I wonder, satellite strong from